It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here. Paul had a big scoop this week. I think he'll probably talk about it on Thurrott.com. All about, well, it's related to that Consumer Reports report that Surface reliability was very low. Microsoft may have misrepresented the situation at the beginning. We'll find out next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 531, recorded Wednesday, August 16th, 2017. B is for Broadwell. Windows Weekly is brought to you by 23andMe. With 23andMe's genetic service, you can learn what percentage of your DNA comes from places like Italy, Finland, East Asia, Africa. Visit 23andMe.com/twit. And by WordPress, your customers want to find you. Build a WordPress.com website and keep them connected to your business. Get 15% off any new plan purchase at WordPress.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. All right, I'm going to kill the Hobbit theme. Hello, Paul. You are in your new domicile. Pay no attention to the round doors and the oddly low ceiling.
What is that? Oh, that's a reflection. Yeah. That's terrible. No, it looks like it's paint splotching or something.
Yeah, it does look like paint splotching, but that's okay.
No, those are like plants in the window.
If you were to color that a little bit, it'd look like the Windows logo.
What color are you thinking, Leo? Because honestly, it's kind of an open palette at this point.
It is a little bland. Is this going to be your new office?
I think so. Yeah. I'm still 100% not sold on it, but yeah. Mm. There's a fireplace in here. It'll be cozy in the winter.
Oh, that's nice. You might need that in the winter.
Yes.
Do you think Emmaus, Pennsylvania, your new home, is as cold as Dedham, Massachusetts, your old?
No, it definitely is not.
Oh, good. It's south by 0.3
there
degrees.
There should be 7% less snow.
Nice.
It's probably double digits less snow.
He's going through a little culture shock back from Barcelona, where he did nothing but eat ham and drink sangria and party till 3 in the morning for the last 2 weeks.
Actually, you know, it's goofy, but I kind of did do that. We were out later on this trip than we've ever been. We've been here a few times, and we would wake up incredibly late for us. You know, it was actually kind of unusual. We went swimming at night, midnight-ish, at least twice.
It's kind of weird when you're in Barcelona. Everything just is time-shifted by about 4 or 5 hours. It's just weird.
The best thing about it is if you are out early in the morning, what you'll see is people going to clubs.
You know?
And it was one of the places we tried to find the hours for a place in Barcelona. It was a restaurant bar. And I could be off a couple hours in either direction, but they were only closed 3 hours a day. And I believe their opening hours were 9 a.m. to 6 a.m.
Oh, man.
Oh my God. Amazing. Yikes. Well, welcome back.
So you get that little bit. Thank you.
Yeah. And Mary Jo Foley, also here from allaboutmicrosoft.com.
No ham stories here. Sorry.
Yeah, no. No, although you're in the biggest city in the world, so you could get anything that Paul could get. You could get anything.
Probably.
Shufi pie. Oh, you're talking about from Barcelona.
From Barcelona, not from Pennsylvania. Yes. Is Pennsylvania the home of shufi pie?
I believe it is.
Wow. There's something.
Fun fact, no flies.
No flies in shufi pie.
No shoes. No flies.
No shoes.
No pies. I want pies, me precious.
I'm sorry. I'm still in the Hobbit thing. So, Paul, where did you write this rant? Were you on a plane? You were good. I thought you socked it to him. You had a big scoop all about the problems with Surface devices. We were complaining. I had a Surface Book. You had the Surface Pro 4.
Yep.
And both of us were complaining for, I would say, almost 8 months about the hot bag problem, about weird
Yep.
You know, not just power issues, but mostly power issues, weird issues. We suffered through it. We survived. Firmware updates finally fixed the problem. As Microsoft famously said, it was a tough computer problem. They said they blamed Intel for a challenging Skylake, a buggy Skylake.
Yep.
You blew the lid off that excuse.
Well, you know, it's funny. I feel so there was the original Surface Gate, which is what you're referring to. This is from early 2016. When, like you said, we were waiting for a long time to get answers and to get fixes for those Surface products. And then there's been the more recent event with Consumer Reports where they dropped their recommendation for Surface products. And there's been some interesting back and forth about that. And a lot of people are coming to Microsoft's defense as if rising up against Consumer Reports is a smart thing to do, but whatever.
those evil Consumer Reports people.
Those evil one-sided bastards over Consumer Reports.
I think the point to be made, and I've made it a couple of times, is while you and I, besides those early power issues, we didn't experience any defects, but Consumer Reports surveys, and I know because I'm a member, their membership every year, They are, I think, one of the few groups that really has long-term reliability reports because of that survey.
Yeah.
I've always trusted them for cars
and
appliances.
This is the thing. You know, it's funny. Things happen to you in life, and it kind of forces you to look at a different part of the world that you never understood before. And, of course, you wrestle with these issues that other people just sort of natively understand. So when it comes to Consumer Reports, they've been doing this for decades with a long variety of products. And you know, cars are a great example. People who buy cars in the United States a lot of times will look at the reliability data that the Consumer Reports compiles, and it's really accurate and very helpful if you're buying an expensive product like that. And Mary Jo and I were talking before the show, and one of the things I kind of brought up at that time was just this notion of, you know, reliability data from the past kind of influences your belief about a product's reliability going forward as well. And so if you have a product that's built on the same platform, one might expect the next version will have the same problems, unless the automaker, in this case, addresses them. When you have a new product, in other words, like a Jetta or something, a new platform, they've completely changed the car, that first year, especially the first several months, is a little tough because you don't really have enough data to understand how things have changed. Right.
What if you were in a position you'd never built a car before?
Yes.
And this was your very first car.
Right. Maybe you made the engine before, but you don't understand how that thing connects to wheels.
Right.
Or, or whatever.
Yeah. Right. I think it seems like Microsoft's always made PCs, but they haven't. These are their first.
No, brand new. It's PCs. New. So, over the weekend, great timing because I was flying home on Monday. I saw an internal memo from Panos Panay describing the Surface reliability issues in great detail to his team. And I was able to put that together, that information, with some other stuff I had gotten from sources over the past several months about Surface to add some context to it. What's interesting is since I wrote this, of course, I spent 23 hours disconnected from the world, got home, crashed, got up, got in a car, and drove to Pennsylvania. I have some further context to add to this, which I think will bring the story full circle finally, which is kind of interesting. And so I guess the basic background of this is that, yes, Microsoft had some big reliability issues with Surface Pro 4 and Surface Book, and their internal data confirms that. We've always known that to be the case, but, you know, they've had some problems.
Experienced it directly.
Now, right, but let's qualify how bad it was, because this was the shocking part to me in your story. This memo you saw has the return rates for the first Surface Pro 4s and the first Surface Books right when they came out. And it was 17 and 16%.
Yeah.
That seems huge to me. I mean, I don't know what an average return rate is on a new product, but when I saw that, I was like, okay, we knew there were problems with this, but I didn't think they were that bad.
Yeah, that's almost 1 in 5. That's huge.
Yeah. And that's Microsoft's own data. This isn't like somebody guessing this number. This is their data from a leaked memo that was not supposed to go outside the company.
If you're looking at the line graph on Paul's article, I'm showing it on the screen if you're watching video. The blue line is Surface Pro 3. Surface Pro 4 is the orange line. The yellow line is Surface Book, which all along had the highest return rate. Surface Studio.
Yeah, I have some theories about that too, by the way. But it's – important to understand that Surface Pro 4 and Surface Book are the same basic computer. The difference is that with Surface Book, they implemented the screen differently, and it has that special clipboard mechanism. And, of course, you can add a dedicated GPU to a Surface Book as well.
A lot of the problems I had with my Surface Book was with that detach, confusing,
that's right.
confusing the hell out of it.
Conversely, a lot of the times you can fix problems with Surface Book by detaching it and reattaching it,
yeah,
right, which
right.
is the Surface Book version of turn it off.
Now, this is, this is the 90-day return rate, but this is for any reason at all. And it could be also just I throw up my hands or I didn't like the form factor. Doesn't have to be reliability.
We don't have the data for Surface Pro 1 and 2 in there, but if you look at that and forget about the spikes for a second, what you're seeing is basically a downward trend, which is good
time,
until those two new devices were released and then it shot back up. But but over time, they go down as well. In fact, they go down and basically get Surface, I would say, back on track overall to where they were heading back in 2014 or whatever that is, 2014.
So the peak was almost 17% on the Surface Book, and that was in that was in November, December 2015. That was shortly. That was literally a month or two after it came out.
Yeah, if you look at Surface Pro 3, especially the last couple of years, there are some spikes right around August to October or whatever, and both of those years. And I wonder if that isn't related to back-to-school purchases. So you would see an increase in sales,
right.
And then for whatever reason, whether it's reliability or otherwise, those customers decided, this isn't for me, and they brought it back.
So this is these numbers are a percentage, not a raw number. So they're a percentage of total.
Yep. So by the way, that's yet another way to kind of obfuscate what's actually happening here, because 10% of 100 is one number, but 5% of 700 is a completely different kind of number, and we just don't know. And Surface Pro 3, I think it's fair to say, over the course of that device's lifetime, probably was selling fewer units each month, and we don't know how that return rate correlates to that. They don't provide that information. I don't want to get too much into that aspect of it. I don't feel that Microsoft is being purposely deceptive internally or externally, but they do cherry pick things.
Yeah,
obviously.
And somebody in the chat room saying we don't know if these people returned it and got a new one, or returned it and got a different one, or returned it and got their money back. None of that is specified.
No, we can raise those kind of questions for basically every data point we're going to discuss here. That's one of the problems.
This is a big scoop, though, for you, Paul. I mean, this information, because weren't they telling both of you, Intel's problem? It's not.
Yeah. This is where I think we can bring it full circle today. So back in early 2016, the story, and I got this from multiple, I would say, highly sourced sources or highly placed sources of Microsoft, was that Skylake was the buggiest ever version of an Intel CPU chipset. And, of course, Microsoft was first out of the gate, and with Skylake products, that is, and they had problems immediately. It is interesting, to look back at this and realize, because I've talked to PC makers, Mary Jo has, and we talked to numerous owners of devices, and actually there were problems at other PC makers with this CPU, but not to the degree that Microsoft had, right? And so you could look at that from a couple of different angles. One is that Microsoft was first, right? And so they got hit in the face with this before anyone understood the problems. But the other little bit of context I got literally today was that, and I actually forgot about this, Lenovo and HP and Dell and the other PC companies had the same testing experience that Microsoft did before they released their own products. Microsoft went back to Intel and said, hey, we have this advanced technology in Windows 10, which obviously we're going to support in our own product, called Connected Standby. But this thing is failing all the time on Connected Standby. That was the big source of the big problem that the Surface devices had. And Intel told them they were going to fix it. So Microsoft is kind of faced with a weird choice. They could release new hardware, two devices that first to ship with Windows 10 from Microsoft that don't support a key Windows 10 power management feature. Or you could fix it, you could ship it with that feature enabled, knowing it's not going to work, right? And betting that Intel is going to do right by you as its biggest partner and fix this problem, which they did not do. And the result was the return rates you saw and the reliability problems that we all know about. Now, Lenovo, Dell, HP, whoever, they had the same testing experience. And they went to Intel and they said, hey, this thing's broken. And Intel says, yeah, I know, we're going to fix it. And they said, yeah, screw that, we're not enabling it. Because those guys have much longer experiences with Intel and they know how this works. So that's what they did. They just left it off. And that's why those guys had better reliability experiences than Microsoft did. Now, it's a little bit Microsoft, a little bit Intel, right? It's fair to say they both did things wrong or made mistakes, however you want to say it. But I also think it's fair to remember that Microsoft's case, they were kind of stuck. They had resolved to be first out of the gate with Skylake. They wanted to kind of lead the way with that generation. They have their own, you know, wonderful power management technology. Intel's supposed to support it. And, man, it took them a long time to fix it. And in this case, I would say, you know, some Microsoft, some Intel. Took them a long time. Microsoft made mistakes. Remember, Microsoft was very quiet about these problems. It never came out. The whole point of my SurfaceGate article was me saying to those guys, look, you got to stand up on stage like Steve Jobs did at Antennagate and just talk. Explain yourself. Tell people you're going to fix it. You know, and they declined to do that, suffice to say. But I think part of the reason was they were really unclear on when Intel was going to finally show up and fix this problem. And for the duration, they were kind of hanging there in the wind. So if we flash forward a year or so, and now the Consumer Reports thing happens, Microsoft internally feels like they've turned the corner on reliability with Surface. One of the bits of speculation that I have in this article is that the reason that Microsoft released Surface Laptop and the new Surface Pro with the old architecture, meaning USB 3/ Surface Connect based instead of more modern USB-C Thunderbolt 3, is that by this point, that stuff's a known quantity. The drivers have been fixed. They needed to release things that were going to be reliable out of the gate. What they didn't need to do was take another chance on new Intel technology and get screwed again and then never be able to recover from this. So when I have complained, and I think it's a valid complaint, that Microsoft is the only PC maker that has not adopted the latest PC technology with all these awesome advanced features, you almost have to look at it in the context of what happened to them in the past and from their perspective, and they just went the safe route on this. Why would Microsoft release a laptop in 2017 that had been sitting in their labs for 3 or 4 years? Because they knew it was going to work, you know? That was part of the rationale for these products. Why is Surface Pro, not 5, exactly the same as Surface Pro 4, basically? Because they knew it was going to work, you know? And that was the point. So in any event, Microsoft is looking at Consumer Reports and saying, wait a minute, you're saying we have whatever failure rate. We don't see that in our own data, not today, but of course over time they do, and what they need to do is recover a little bit from a kind of a PR perspective. And so they came out with what they came out publicly. They said what they said internally, which is what I wrote about. And I guess if we take Microsoft's information at face value, and I still trust these guys, things have improved, and so the newer generation of devices have improved. The reliability of Surface Book and Surface Pro 4 have, in fact, improved over time as Intel has released new versions of the firmware and driver chipsets and so, the driver sets and so forth.
So it's fair to blame Intel.
It's fair. No, it's a little bit of both.
I feel like it's a little both, too.
If you're going to use the features Intel wanted them to use, you're going to have problems, right? So you have to...
Well, I think as a PC maker, Intel every year or two will come up with a new chipset generation, and you as a PC maker evaluate that, and you identify problems, you go back to Intel, and between the two of you, you hope to solve those problems for your own platforms. In the case of the power management stuff, based on their experience with Intel for years and years and years, these other companies said, yeah, we're not doing this because we know how you work, and you may solve it next year, but the reality is we'll probably not implement it until Kaby Lake or whatever.
Right.
Microsoft, without that kind of experience, maybe slightly naive perhaps, believing Intel would in fact follow through on their promises, and like I said, you know, needing to meet the demands of its own self-inflicted wound that, you know, we make Windows 10, it has this feature. We're using Intel hardware, it supports this feature. We have to do this because, look, we're all complaining about what happened, but had they released that thing without support for their own power management scheme, we would have been making fun of that them for that, you know, back then. How could Microsoft release a modern PC without this, you know, thing that they invented or they added to their software at least? But there was another little bit of information in this story because I can't leave well enough alone. So I added in some context of my own from sources at Microsoft, again, who told me that, the problems that Microsoft blamed on Intel were, in fact, caused by Microsoft. I would say today it's maybe more fair that it's a mix of Microsoft and Intel. But B, I had the story about Satya Nadella sitting down with some Lenovo executives and asking them how they were handling the Skylake problems, to which the Lenovo guy said, "What are you talking about? We don't have any problems with Skylake." And that was supposedly how he had found out that the problems were Microsoft's fault, and he went back and who knows what happened. So I had a conversation today about, you know, now that I'm finally available to have that conversation. And I guess the context on that one is, and this is, it's a fair point, which is that if you imagine the CEO of one company meets with the CEO of another company and they talk about products and stuff, I mean, to what level would a CEO be aware of this kind of a thing? So it makes sense that Satya Nadella would be aware of the fact that there were reliability problems with Surface products. That's a huge public thing. But if you look at the guy from, let's say, the CEO of Lenovo, whoever that person was, how's it going with the problems with this PC chipset thing that's in your computers? And he says, "I have no idea what you're talking about. We're not having any problems." Well, what he wouldn't know, because why would they tell him, is that the guys who run Lenovo's PC business, the ThinkPad guys in North Carolina, evaluated the chipset, realized this thing wasn't going to work, and they just turned it off. You don't have to send a memo to the CEO where, you know, we shipped X number of products, we have X percent reliability, whatever it is, that's all he needs to know. And so from his perspective, there were no problems.
Right. It could be that there weren't. Were. Yeah.
Right? I mean, you know, if you have a problem with like a certain kind of an airbag, and you don't put the airbag in your car, and the other car company CEO says, "Hey, how are you handling that airbag thing?" Your answer is, "We're not. It's fine. What do you mean? We don't have that problem." Right. We don't have that problem because we're not using that thing.
Right.
And so I that's an interesting way to look at that. I use that little story because think about it. Like my source in this case was not a person who was in the room with those CEOs or whatever. But this story clearly made its way back to Microsoft and to the rank and file in the Surface team because it was probably used as an example of, hey, we just screwed up. And so it's sort of a secondhand story. But it's not necessarily as terrible as it sounds when you kind of put it in perspective.
And it's only from the point of view of consumers. You know, I mean, the consumer doesn't care who made the mistake or what the mistake was or what happened. They just know.
They just want it.
Lenovo got it right. My laptop works.
By the way, that's a good point. That's a really good point. And, you know, the one thing I'll say for Microsoft is, aside from the fact, you know, they're new at this and they're learning as they go and all that kind of stuff, it's very clear reading just the words that Panay uses to the troops. Obviously, the public stuff is whatever. But the stuff he says internally, it's very interesting to me because it's honest and it's kind of raw, and he clearly gives a crap about the people who buy these products. He clearly gives a crap about the products themselves, which is super important. And they're serious about making this stuff better all the time. And so I sort of read this. We can absolutely criticize for this and for that, and we can lay blame if we want at the feet of whatever company in various cases and all that stuff. But it's clear to me that they believe things are improving. I mean, we'll have to wait and see how that is. It's only been a little a month or 2 months or whatever with these products. But I can tell you, if you go back to Surface Pro 4 or Surface Book, problems, 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 problems. Mm. We heard nothing but problems. We didn't just have the problems ourselves. We heard from readers, listeners all the time. Yeah. It was constant. And
but you know what concerns me, just you bringing that point up, is Surface Pro, the newest ones, right out of the gate started having hibernation problems, right? And we don't know how many had it. But again, it's like, okay, wait, they're still having power issue problems with the newest surfaces.
Power management's always going to be the sore spot, I guess, with Surface.
Yeah. But if you look at the plug, the one device that plugs in the Surface Studio, it has the lowest rejection rate, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Makes sense because it doesn't have power issues. They don't come out.
No, that's it's all fair. I mean, the only thing, just the new Surface Pro, my only vague kind of reply to that would be we make these connections because we're people. And that you see like a power management issue with the new Surface Pro and you say, wait a minute, these other ones had Surface or power management issues. This must be the same thing. They fixed that issue. I think we're done with this. Like, I don't, now that I've said that, we won't be, but
I know.
I have not heard anyone complaining about this. And I tend to hear from the complainers.
Yeah, agree.
I think they rally around.
Like, when we heard it, when we heard the hibernation thing at first, from it was quick. They, but you know what I didn't like is how they addressed it, right? Like, and this to me is what's worrisome here. Like you're saying in the memo, Panay sounds very much like we want people to love our products. I have no doubt the team wants people to love the products and that they care about the consumer. But whenever we bring an issue to them, here's how it goes. So we are hearing from people who are having hibernation problem. Oh, yeah, there's a tiny group of people having a hibernation problem. And you know what? We'll fix it at some point. Then they fix it. They hide the fact that they fixed it in a tech forum post that you wouldn't find unless you really went out of your way to look for it. And we don't know still how many people were affected, because the answer is always a small subset. And as we see from this graph, a small subset could be a very big number of people.
Well, 20% is a small subset in a way.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
If you had a 20% chance of failing someone,
it's only 1 in 5. Come on, guys.
Right. So that's what's worrisome to me. My hope is this whole issue they have with Consumer Reports and being publicly dinged like this will change how they go about addressing issues when it affects more than just a couple of people. Like, if it really is affecting a substantial number of people and they have to issue a firmware fix, they should be very public about this, right? Yeah. It should be on their blog. It should be, hey, some of you are having this problem. Here is the fix.
What you're describing is the reason I wrote Surface Gate in the first place. Feel that at Microsoft, because it's the company I cover primarily, but any company really, but let's just say Microsoft, you can't be too transparent. It's one of the reasons I find their financial reporting every quarter to be so problematic. It's so awful because the sheer like cherry picking where it's like, oh, here's a good, oh, here we go, let's use this one. And then every quarter it's a little different. So you can't do a quarter over quarter analysis of anything. And you know it's by design. And I don't mean to say that's deceptive per se, except actually I do mean to say that. It undercuts what is otherwise, I think, a really nice sense of transparency for Microsoft. Mm-hmm. This is a company that allows its employees to blog and tweet openly out in the world and interact with customers on their own with no oversight whatsoever. I mean, it's really kind of a neat company in that way compared to, say, like Apple, which is the, you know, the North Korea of technology companies from a transparency perspective.
But
then this kind of stuff happens, you know, and it does make it tough.
I know. And, you know, I understand when they say to us, you know, the reason we don't tell you how many people are affected is, you know, that number varies and it's such a relatively small percentage. But, you know, these numbers in this chart make me doubt now that it is a small percentage.
Well, you know, like I'm so it's awful being me, obviously. Just look at me. But, you know, I always look for the little bits of information that are never provided that I think are important to the sentence. Yeah. Like when we're selling our house. I know this doesn't sound like it applies, but it does. The woman who was selling her house said, you know, called and said, hey, everything's going great. And my response to that was, compared to what? You know, in other words, compared
sometimes
to how it usually goes when you have other open houses.
To be a pessimist.
Well, no, I mean, it's an important, like, you got to put it in context. So in other words, Surface reliability has improved with these current products to some percentage. The number of people who are returning these devices has improved by a certain percentage. You know, people like the devices. Yeah, great. That's not reliability. That doesn't say. I mean, people who spend lots of money on stuff
like them
may not be underreport problems because you know,
I never reported a problem except on this show, but I never call Microsoft.
Right.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Windows Weekly isn't one of the telemetry points that they have for product reliability,
But so I'm from the outside looking in. It's a little bit, it has less nuance than, those of us who pay close attention. Mm-hmm. From the outside looking in, Microsoft, well known for Windows, makes its first personal computers. They start at a higher level than if Leo decided to make his first laptop. Right. When Leo ships his first laptop, you might say, well, Leo has a little bit to learn in terms of power management, and he would have been dinged, frankly,
yes.
Been badly dinged. Microsoft was able to skate through a little bit because it's Microsoft, yeah. and they made some very nice hardware on the Surface. Pun excluded.
Yeah,
on the Surface, it was very nice. And I think that the issue that Consumer Reports has is these reliability ratings, they're really good for durable goods like cars and appliances because you own them for a long time. And so those numbers are useful. And you probably are buying, when you buy a car, the same model roughly a year later. That's not true of personal electronics. And so I think...
Last a while, right? People do use them for a while.
Well, we know, but the point Microsoft's making is the Surface Book you're buying today is not the Surface Book that people returned in 2015. And in fact, the numbers kind of bear that out, that the return rate is dropping on all of the hardware over time.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So,
I'm just saying from the outs, and then there's this other issue which Microsoft faces where a bad reputation is very hard to lose.
Yes.
And so even though they aren't perceived as a new manufacturer in some ways, as a new manufacturer, your market can go away. If once Leo's computer has been seen to have problems out of the gate, Leo will not be able to sell the next generation, fixed or not.
All right. In other words, they'll tell you it's better, but of course they would tell you that.
Right. So Panos Panay is fighting this uphill battle. I understand what he's trying to say, which is, you know what? This stuff, we know there was a problem now. We know there was a problem, and we fixed it, and these are great now. And I think they're going to get by with that in a way that a normal new manufacturer might not. But this is this is their concern, I understand, is this long-term perception.
Well, the super high profile. You know, if some new Chinese company came up and had power management issues with their new product, this wouldn't be on the news.
Right.
But when Consumer Reports removes their recommendation from Microsoft Surface, it's on the nightly news.
But also, geeks are in more communication about product reliability and so forth. I think they're better informed consumers generally. So the natural market for their computers is going to know about these problems.
Right.
And so there's some uphill battle to convince them it's fixed.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing we didn't talk about that is in that memo that Paul saw is Panos Panay saying, we have a plan to go out and try to fix the damage that was done from the Consumer Reports stuff. So we don't know exactly what form that is going to take. You know, is it going to be ads? Is it going to be blog posts? Is it going to be them seeding things with other bloggers? We don't really know, but they realize this, what you're saying.
Mary Jo, I was the plan.
You were the plan. You obviously were the plan.
You know, if you buy luggage and you buy a pair of luggage and the zipper fails in the first 10 months, then you buy another one and it fails again, you will never again buy that luggage. And more to the point, you will tell people and the word will get around and that really hurts them. Even if they figured out, it was a bad zipper supplier and we're using a good zipper supplier now and we fixed the problem, they may not get a second chance. So I understand their reluctance to come forward and say,
there's a lot that plays into this because late last year, remember, Microsoft announced that they were going to bring Windows 10 to ARM chips, like real Windows 10. I really believe very strongly that the impetus for that was this Intel stuff, right? And we can point fingers all we want, but Intel and Microsoft are great partners, but they're also kind of at each other's throats a little bit privately anyway. And I think that, they need some company, and AMD wasn't doing it. Although you could make the argument they've had a nice little comeback this year, but at the time they certainly weren't doing it. And that they need someone in that role, someone to play the foil to Intel, you know. And so how Intel responds to that will be interesting. But remember, what was the those always connected PCs, that announcement, right? Everyone kind of latched that thing onto ARM. Like, here's the thing they're doing with ARM. And Intel was like, excuse me. We're part of that too. Hello. We still really big over here. No, you know, Intel, the logo, it's on the computer. You remember?
Intel inside.
We do that. That's us. me too.
You know, it's interesting. Actually, I think what has been happening with Intel is they've been putting more and more, not just of power management, more and more of everything in the processor, which in the long run is good for compatibility because, well, for instance, I hate to always bring this up, but nowadays when I install Linux, even on a brand new computer, it understands even things like the function, the volume function keys and the power management, because it's not handling that. The chips now is starting to, the hardware is starting to do a lot of this stuff. But it's a double-edged sword. If it's badly implemented, that hurts. Right. Then the OS is going to have a problem. And I think that's what you're seeing. In the long run, this is going to benefit all of us, frankly. I think that PCs will be better and more reliable because Intel's putting more of this stuff in the chip.
I mean, aside from this episode, I mean, PCs are obviously more reliable than they were years ago. And you know, we've had a couple of bumps, but overall, you know, PCs last for a really long time. And for normal people who don't screw around with things, like upgrading to a different version of Windows or running an insider program thing on the, if they just use the computer, that thing will actually run reliably for them for a long time in most cases. I mean, I don't, you know, generally speaking. And I think that plays into some of this stuff too, because the upgrade to Windows 10 for people like us who have gone from 7 to 8, which was a disaster, to 8.1, to 8.1.1, and then to 10 has been kind of like this natural, you know, evolution. But for people who've been sitting on a Windows 7 computer for the past 8 years or whatever, and then they finally go buy a new computer, it must be like getting smacked in the face. Like, they probably have no idea what happened, you know. But PCs last a long time. That's the world that Microsoft is selling into these days. Yeah,
they did a great job, unfortunately. And now you buy one Windows 10 and you get it forever. I mean, what a world.
Right.
What a world we live in. You don't have to upgrade just to get a new operating system anymore.
Yep.
That's a big change. All right, well, I'm going to take a little break. We have lots more to talk about. You mentioned in these notes that it might change Microsoft's relationship with Intel. Do you want to talk a little bit about that before we move on?
I think we're talking there more
ARM.
Yeah, more like the ARM thing. Like, you know, it how is that going to change the dynamic
with ARM? I mean, I don't think
it could.
You know, I mean,
it totally could. Plus, we still don't know. Remember Intel was kind of threatening, hey, did you guys make sure you properly licensed our IP if you're going to do Win32 emulation on ARM?
Oh,
yeah. They were kind of hinting that.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So
the relationship goes both ways.
It does.
and by the way, as far as blame goes and all that kind of stuff, let's not forget that last year, Microsoft said, hey, by the way, we are not supporting Windows 7 or Windows 8X on, I think it was Skylake. Or past Skylake, I guess. It was probably Kaby Lake. And come on. where did that come from? I mean, these companies were obviously going at it. Now, they scaled back from the cliff nicely since then. But we're still kind of hitting this hard stop. Microsoft ultimately is still going to get what it wants, which is another way to force customers onto Windows 10 by only supporting Windows 10 on the latest hardware. You can make great arguments in either direction for this one, because frankly, the broader computer population users are better off if everyone's on roughly the same OS version. I mean, you can make that argument.
Well, it's
I am not going to make that argument, but you can.
Yeah, it's interesting. Interesting. As long as I can remember, despite it being called Wintel. Intel and Microsoft have always had these little tiffs. I remember interviewing Andy Grove years ago when he was saying, well, we make 32-bit chips, but those gosh darn folks over in Redmond refuse to make a 32-bit operating system. He was surprisingly candid in his anger at Microsoft. So that goes back. That's 20 years ago.
That's a different generation. That guy was way outspoken.
Well, you're not going to hear Brian Krzanich say anything, obviously.
No. I mean, and of course, Bill Gates at that time was like the overlord of the computer industry.
Right? Right.
And everyone hated him.
Yeah, well.
Now the guy's giving away billions of dollars. He's curing malaria. He's bringing you know, health and education to third world countries. Right. He's like Papa Gates.
Papa Gates. <You know? laughs> Uncle Gates. All right, let's take a little
this
break.
This kindly grandfather character.
We can talk about the band, the Microsoft band.
We're
bringing the band back together again.
Finally.
Yeah. No. No. Windows 10. There's a lot more to talk about. Stuff for developers, stuff for the cloud, and stuff for Xbox. We might even get the word Hadoop in if you're good little boys and girls. But first, let's talk about your genetics. I want to talk to you. Hi. I'd like to talk to you about your genes. I know about my genes. I love it. I did 23andMe, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, when they first started, because I loved this idea of finding out more about me. What's not to love about talking about yourself? 23andMe, you spit into a vial. You send the it's just a little.
You're really selling this, Leo.
Well, I don't want people to worry that they're going to have to take blood or a spit is all they need. It's a little saliva, but your genes are in there, which I didn't actually know. And you're going to get over 75 online genetic reports, everything from ancestry to wellness to traits to carrier status, so you can learn more. Look, this is the other thing I love about this. Is as time goes by, they learn more and more. They're continuing to update your site as they learn more and more about you. If your hair is back free, a variant from your Neanderthal, wouldn't you think that the Neanderthals would have given you a hairy back? But no, it's your Neanderthal. Now this is cool because until 2010, I was just reading about this. Scientists thought that Neanderthals and Homo sapiens couldn't mate. There was no interbreeding, but they found Neanderthal genetic material, I think in some old bones. They analyzed it, and lo and behold, we did intermarry, and many of us have Neanderthal genes. I actually have 265 Neanderthal variants, and if I have a less hairy back, it's because of that. Is that wild? I am in seventh place out of my family and friends when it comes to Neanderthal. I'm actually fairly low. I am in the bottom third of 23andMe. This stuff is fascinating. I love the ancestry stuff. Like, you learn about where your bloodlines come from. I'm 39% British and Irish. You can learn about your paternal or your maternal haplogroup. That is, where your mother's line came from and how it propagated from Africa 180,000 years ago. This is where my genes were. 65,000 years ago, they went from kind of central eastern Africa to northern eastern Africa, then into the Middle East and the Fertile Crescent, and then up into Europe 47,000 years ago. That's my maternal haplogroup. You can see how your paternal haplogroup does. It's really this stuff. I love this stuff. Of course, there's lots more. You know, I know that I have an abnormal love for caffeine. Believe it or not, that's one of my my traits. Can you smell asparagus? Pretty likely you're going to smell the asparagus metabolite. I don't want to go into that in too much detail. I think you know what I'm talking about here. Okay, but did you know that was genetically determined? Bitter, sweet, back hair, bald spot, cheek, dimples, cleft chin. I am likely not to have a cleft chin or dimples, but I am likely to have detached earlobes and wet earwax. All of these things.
You're a genetic bouillabaisse.
I love this stuff. It's really, let me just check the unibrow. Likely little or no unibrow. Oh, that's a relief. And that is based on a little vial of spit you send 23andMe. Is that not awesome? You can also use the relative finder tool. And I love this to find and connect with new relatives. I found a second cousin because he used 23andMe. And based on a 3.44% shared genetic stuff, whatever you call that, they think I'm a second cousin. And you know what? I know I am because that's my grandma's maiden name. Is that awesome? I love this stuff. All you do, you mail that little sample of spit back to the lab. They give you a kit, of course, and a prepaid mailer. And you review the results online with 6 to 8 weeks. And no blood, no needles. And you learn more all the time as they learn more. You can also, this is relatively new, download your entire genetic profile. So if you have other analytic tools or you want to pass it on to another researcher, you can do that. They get more and more information all the time. This is my chromosomes, and I can browse it by chromosome, which is so awesome. 23andme.com/twit. Can I say this is a fan? If you do this, it's a fantastic gift for other family members. They love it. They love it because, well, it's all together now. 23andme.com/twit. Find out how long you can hold your hand in ice water. That's a genetic trait. It really, I'm telling you, it's the coolest thing ever. Maybe it's just because I like reading stuff about me, but who doesn't, right? 23andme.com/twit. We thank them for their support of Windows Weekly. On we go with the Windows Weekly show. Paul Thurrott back from his journey to Europe. He's now returned to Pennsylvania, the smallest town in the world. In the upper
which I keep, by the way, I keep reading as Transylvania.
No, he's Transylvania. He's in the what is it?
Transylvania.
The Upper Macudgie Valley.
Lower Macudgie. Come on, Leo, get it straight.
Oh, you don't
like
want to
difference between East Dedham and Dedham.
You don't want to be in the Upper Macudgie Valley. Yeah,
that's all I'm saying.
Mary Jo Foley, she's in Manhattan. Are you in Upper Manhattan, Mary Jo Foley?
I'm in Mid Manhattan.
She's in Midtown. That actually more than Lehigh County. Uptown, downtown, east side, west side makes a big difference on that little tiny island.
It does.
Yeah. Mary Jo Foley writes about Microsoft at ZDNet, her blog allaboutmicrosoft.com. Must read. Paul, of course, has the Thurrott.com blog. I like how in your big scoop, did Brad do that? It says instead of Paul Thurrott or I got a scoop, it says Thurrott.com has learned. Brad, knock it off. Thurrott.com has learned.
Actually, I got some advice from Mary Jo a few years ago about how to communicate the fact that you've seen confidential information.
Oh, smart. Yeah. ZDNet has learned.
Yes.
But Paul, you blew your cover because you on this show. So it's okay. It's a good thing.
No, I'm not saying
it's not like anybody at Microsoft listens to this show.
I'm just saying, you know.
No, you're right. Don't put it in writing. You don't want to toot your own horn.
Subpoenaed.
Oh.
No,
but you know what? I will stand up for your right as a journalist to protect your sources. And when you go to jail, we will still do the show.
We'll still send you ham.
For as
we
long
will.
As they hold you.
Ham packages will come for you.
What prison's like around here, do you think?
Just blame the alt-left, Paul. It works every time.
A federal facility?
Yeah, no. Oh, there is. Isn't there one near you?
There's got to be.
Isn't Allentown? That's where all the white collar
penal colony in the middle of Pennsylvania.
You can hang out with people like Bernie Madoff. It's great.
Sure.
He's helping the inmates do stock tips.
I wrote this article about Surface. Get Chip right there. That'd be the end of it. Microsoft Surface.
Oh Lord. No, you'd be a hero there.
Yes.
You'd be a hero. So there are still people using the Microsoft band. They discontinued it, I'm sad to say. And I hope I didn't raise hopes that they may have brought it back with my tease.
No.
It's not back.
No, it's not back. But there are still quite a few people using the band, too. And even people who are taping it together because they love it that much.
Oh, wow.
People were sending me pictures of their taped bands. They're using like kinesiology tape and duct tape to hold the things together. And they're still wearing them.
Wow.
Boy.
So about a week and a half ago, people who had the band too started sending in notes and tweeting that they no longer could sync the band to the backend servers at Microsoft. And they believed, and they were correct in believing this, that Microsoft had not discontinued support for the band, even though they don't make them anymore. So for a week, there was absolute radio silence from Microsoft about what was going on. And people were tweeting to me like, are they doing anything? Do they know? And I tried to get comment. I couldn't get comment. Microsoft UK, their Twitter said at one point, we know this is happening and we're looking into it. Donna Sarkar, even at the end of last week, said, yep, we're looking into this. And then early this week, Microsoft sent out a note to me and said, we actually have identified the cause of the sync issue and we're fixing it. So I think most of the people I'm talking to now who are having this have seen it fixed. But there's another syncing issue that's still occurring, which is people who don't have the band but are running the band application on their phone to track their steps or whatever using their phone are also still having the syncing issue. And I haven't been able to get an official comment on that, but I hear from one of my sources they know, and they're trying to fix that too. So diehard band fans, don't give up. They still are going to keep supporting you. We don't know when the end of support date is, but for now, you're in the clear.
Giving up isn't a terrible idea, given where we are.
Put down that kinesiology tape.
Sometimes it's an option. That's all.
I know. But people, for what the band did, especially the sleep tracking, people loved it.
I was one of the big fans, but you know what else does fit sleep tracking? Everything. And also devices like Fitbit get 7 times the battery life. The problem with a strap problem like the band has is that you have to take that thing off every single day to charge it. If you could just leave the damn thing alone for a couple of days, it'd probably be okay.
Mm-hmm. See ya.
Sorry, it's dead, Jim. That's all I'm saying.
It is. But people who have it, your angry mob tweets were heard, and they are fixing it.
I was getting a sinking feeling, so I'm.
Ooh, yep. Ooh, good one.
Get it. Yeah, a little pun. Microsoft adds Windows 10S support to the new Surface Pro. Oh, that's interesting. How would I do that?
I know.
It's just firmware updates. Just driver updates. So remember when they launched the new Surface Pro back in late May, they said at that time that in sometime in the future, this will support Windows 10S as well as Windows 10 Pro, which is what it ships with today. And I've been running Windows 10S on this new Pro for almost 3 weeks now. It's been fine, honestly, but they've just released a set of driver updates that will apparently make this work better. So,
Do you notice any battery or any other kind of savings when you run 10S on the Pro versus not running it?
No, but I haven't run the battery life tests that I did against Pro. Against Windows Pro. The issue for me is that the battery life tests I do are just streaming video over Wi-Fi, and I don't think that's going to be any difference because it's still a UWP app and whatever. But I probably wouldn't.
Yeah. I'm just curious why anybody would put 10S on a Pro.
It's funny you say that because later in the notes, with regards to Windows 10S, I have this question or it's a statement. Why Microsoft enthusiasts use and promote things that don't work is curious, and it's related to this exact issue. Okay. And in the world that we live in, we deal with these people who just are kind of hell-bent on using a Microsoft band. On using Windows Phone, on using Windows 10S, even though none of these things make any sense for anybody. Mm. And we're not psychologists. We can't really explain it, but we see it. We kind of know it. And that's what technology enthusiasts do. And this is the difference between using technology for technology's sake and using technology to get something done, like work. Windows 10S, we'll have a bigger conversation about this later maybe, but it's not ready. Period.
Yeah.
And artificially limiting yourself or changing your work habits or whatever to meet the confined limits of this bizarre product is not something a normal human being would do. It's something that a tech enthusiast does because for some reason they're really into Microsoft. And
or if you're me, like I always say, if you're me, it would probably work. I have limited needs.
I'm trying to decide if edge case or extreme example are worse descriptions. I don't mean to insult you.
I like edge case. You know, pun on edge.
Edge case.
There's a finite group of people who it could work for, and I happen to be in that weird intersection.
That's fine. But I guess what I would say to you is, when people say that people say it's about Windows Phone, it does everything that I need. My response to that is, you have no idea if that's true. Because you're limited. You've limited yourself artificially to the set of things that you know you like to do today, but you are unaware of the possibilities because they're not available to you. Mm-hmm. And so there could be some, you will. This is not one of those 99.9. It's like 100% of the time with a Windows S PC, a Windows S computer of some kind, you will run into a situation where you intend to do something and it will not be available to you. Whether it's an HP printer that won't print for you some other driver set thing or some Chrome thing or some applicate, whatever it is. It's 100% of the time. And that's the thing. So I get what you're saying. Like, you could make it work. But the truth is, you could also make Windows 10 Pro work. And so why not just use that? Because it does everything you need. Plus, it's going to do everything you'll ever need.
Plus, it has more features too, right? Yeah. I mean, security features,
other
features.
You never know. You know, you might like or need that stuff.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah.
We'll get to that.
We'll get there. I was watching the ever thrilling preseason exhibition football games over the last few days. Wow, it's really great when after a play or two, they take all the good players out and they put the high schoolers in. I just really enjoy that. That's
no, it's the same reason I like those the games that are not the Olympics, but it's still sports and it's some kind of weird international contest. It's like a sport I've never heard of.
Hey, if I wanted that, I'd watch soccer for crying out loud.
Yeah. No, I'd watch kids soccer up the street.
For those of you who don't live in the United States, the NFL, the National Football League. Yeah, we call it football. Is that crazy? American football. Yeah. The National Football League makes a ton of money on advertising. So whenever possible, they put games that are ostensibly NFL games on TV.
And then so-called NFL games.
They wear the uniforms. Let's put it that way. Many of the players in the exhibition games are, in fact, you know, destined.
Cast of a local play.
Yeah, destined to go back to work at a local car dealership in a month.
Yep.
But sometimes you get to see an actual member of the team play.
Yeah, like the starting quarterback will go out and throw one, you know, toss into the stands, and then he'll walk off the field.
Yeah,
and
often
he's done.
It's that. Often. In fact, Carr didn't even play at all in the Raiders game. He just watched. They didn't want to hurt him.
And yet, there was probably more footage of him on TV during that game.
It absolutely was. Of him on the sideline chewing gum. Yep. It was hysterical. And by the way, what was he holding? He was holding a Microsoft Surface. I think, anyway, it was a big rubber thing.
Well, by the way, as ordained by the league.
Yeah, well, that's the funniest thing.
Free to hold Surface, or you're free to hold nothing. That's your choice.
Yeah. And because people are running around, throwing themselves around, they're covered with hard rubber in such a way that it could be anything. It could be – he could be holding –
like those the kids' Kindles, right?
They have like
a kid's handle thing on the side.
I do notice the – and, of course, the NFL – what was the deal? It was like $50 million, right? It was a big deal that Microsoft would pay to the NFL.
Actually – I could be. I thought it was in the billions.
What? Billions?
Hundreds of millions or some huge number.
That's a lot of money.
Yikes.
But as they expand the use of this stuff in the NFL, actually, I think we don't know this, but I believe Microsoft's payments would have to go up. They had a 4 or 5 year deal for whatever it was, and now they're doing additional things this season. And I don't think that was a freebie. Because
there's
some technical challenges to this, right?
$400 million. It was a 5-year, $400 million deal struck in 2014.
Yeah, so in year four,
2014.
And I'm thinking they paid more for this. So in other words, this season they've expanded the use of Surface, and they're using Surface Pro 4s now to include instant replays. But because wireless service is so notoriously terrible in these stadiums, not just for Surface, I mean for everything probably. They actually have to tether a cable to it. So the guy runs out in the field unfurling a roll of cable.
Wow.
You know, nothing says mobile first like the alien style tether.
Yeah. But they use it. And you know, actually, I hear it's a real boon because they can see. It used to have notebooks. They would actually print out pictures of
previous plays
and stuff. Yeah. So now they can see video of the plays that happened a few minutes ago.
The biggest critic of Surface in the NFL is Bill Belichick.
He likes
the coach
to throw
of the Patriots.
This is special.
Could be mistaken, but I think they won the championship last year.
That's true.
So he's not a big
fan. Bill's kind of old school.
Kind of old school? he drives the Fred Flintstone car to the stadium.
He pedals with his little furry feet.
Not kind of old school.
So he's not a big fan of the Surface, and yet, in fact, let's watch because I believe I have video of him from last season and his Microsoft Surface. Here he is. He's using it to figure out what's going to happen next as he tosses it
Right.
Right. But it wasn't the surface he didn't like, as you point out. It was the wireless access.
Yeah, when you need it to work, it doesn't.
Right. So they now wire.
That's something the Patriots like to do to other teams, and right. So you can see where that would frustrate him.
Hey, I'm glad you're admitting that. I guess now that you're out of Massachusetts, you could finally tell the truth.
Ooh.
Are you going to become a Steelers fan or an Eagles fan?
Okay.
What is it, Paul? What?
Okay.
Yikes.
I need to understand this. I am less than
you've
an
awoken
hour
the sleeping giant.
Get the gong. No, I'm not going to talk about the Patriots because that's, they're obviously
the gong is right here, guys.
No, but everyone asked me this. You're moving to Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Who's your
are
team?
Are you going to become a Steelers fan?
Right.
There's a team in Philadelphia, right?
Yeah,
and that team is way closer to me.
Okay.
In fact, every team in New York is closer to me. The Baltimore Ravens are closer to me.
I think the Giants actually play in Philadelphia.
They might as well.
Okay.
No, it's interesting.
So you're going to be an Eagles fan, huh?
No, I hate the Eagles.
Yeah, why would you be an Eagles fan? That's a horrible, horrible fate.
No.
Guys, this is almost as bad as talking Xbox.
No, it's worse, I'm sure. I'm sorry. But,
football and Xbox?
We're manly.
Boom.
Oh, boom. Oh!
Okay.
The pain.
Moving along.
Moving right along.
Let's move on to a Hadoop, perhaps, or something better.
Microsoft is changing Windows 10 to meet... What? Wait, I can't believe I'm reading this sentence. To meet all of Kaspersky's demands?
So you may recall that Kaspersky Lab complained and then complained with antitrust bodies around the world that Microsoft had engineered Windows 10 to be hostile toward third-party AV. And after the antitrust charges, Microsoft actually came out publicly and admitted that, he's right. We actually are doing one of these things, which I thought was kind of interesting. And then last week, I think it was right after the show. Actually, it's funny. A bunch of stuff happened right after our show last week. And this was one of them. They said, we're just going to change Windows 10. And they went through the list of things they were changing. And it literally matched the exact list this guy had of complaints. They're going to change Windows 10 and they're going to meet every one of his demands.
We'll see how that goes, right?
Well,
they want to avoid the suit. But yeah.
Okay. I'm just saying that's what they said. I mean, if you look at the list, it's the same list.
Yeah. I just mean, let's see if Microsoft really does with this.
Yes, of course. I mean, so when it comes to Kaspersky, I mean, the thing, I think I said this when we talked about it last time. This has come up twice in the past, 6 or 8 months or whatever. Mm-hmm. And both times it's interesting because I had the same reaction. I saw, Kaspersky complains about Microsoft. I thought, give me a break. And I started reading this with an eye toward, I'm going to write a story about what a crank this guy is. And then you read through his complaints, and you're like, actually, Windows 10 does do that. Yep. No, it does that too. And then you kind of come away from it like, actually, this guy's making really good points.
Yeah.
And I just never expected Microsoft to, bend over this quickly, but they're.
It's a really different Microsoft from the old cantankerous, let's fight everybody, Bill Gates on the stand during the DOJ.
Sure.
I feel like these days they want to settle as many lawsuits before they blossom as they can, which is a good strategy.
Listen, Microsoft is the only reason a company called Real Networks still exists for some reason. Microsoft is a company that killed its own online service so that AOL could be on the Windows desktop. Microsoft, they actually got forced to do the browser ballot, but I don't want to say that they have a rich history of this kind of thing, but they certainly made concessions to competitors in the past. Whether they did it willingly or not is kind of unclear, but, sure.
This just blows me away.
Sure.
Wow. They feel guilty that they put Defender in all versions of Windows and that really there's no reason anybody should have Kaspersky.
Oh,
and besides, it's a Russian spy in your system. But it's
settle down over there.
Okay, go ahead.
I really do feel that Microsoft's arguments about bundling Defender are valid and correct. And years ago, When Microsoft came out with their first consumer antivirus product, which I think was called OnePlus or OneCare, whatever I don't remember what it was called. But I was very upset that Microsoft, the creator of this buggy and insecure product, was now going to fix the problem by charging you for software that would fix the problem with their other software. Like, to me, that seemed ludicrous. And at that time, whenever that was, early 2000-something, my argument was this just needs to be part of Windows. It makes no sense. And if the antivirus community or the antivirus market or business or whatever it is harmed by this, so be it. This is about the users.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
In
fact, the thing Kaspersky most disliked was that Windows 10 disabled AV products on install, which it should, to avoid problems. It was a benefit to consumers, in my opinion. No, seriously.
Well, look, antivirus vendors have the opportunity to differentiate by adding all these other things. And they have lots of other utilities. And there are people who see value in that.
But Microsoft, I don't think, should have any obligation to keep a particular industry alive if it's
I completely agree with that. No, I've always felt that. And that's my point. In other words, Windows Defender being part of Windows 10 makes sense. There's sort of a modern analog to this when you look at what they're doing with their enterprise-based Defender technologies. And I've argued, I think, on the show that some of that stuff should just be available to everyone with Windows 10. This is once again, we've gone to this model where you get the best security if you can pay the most. And I just don't agree with that. Like Windows should just be secure. That should be job one.
Right.
If Kaspersky
moved there slowly to protect these guys.
I just think that the market as it is today, the situation as it is today is mostly okay, except for this enterprise stuff where they're charging extra for it. You get this protection built into Windows, which I think is great. It's never failed me, certainly. And if you want the other stuff, right, because there are other things you can do to secure your computer. And like I said, some people see value in that. And these companies sell that stuff, and that's fine. It's fine. Windows doesn't have to include every single feature that's in a security suite that you pay for on a subscription basis if that's what you want to do.
Yeah, and you know what?
It doesn't have to have all of it.
Mavis Beeking got out of the typing business. There's still opportunities for them to find new...
Well, see, by the way, it's time for a Mavis Beeking comeback because now we need to learn how to type an emoji.
Mavis Beeking teaches emoji typing.
Yep.
What is your... I've actually never talked to you guys about this. And I have talked to Steve about it. On the radio show, I am now adamant that people should not install a third-party antivirus on Windows 10. It is neither necessary nor safe, to say. Now, is not Kaspersky, but some other antiviruses have actually opened holes on Windows and allowed exploits because they work so low at such a low level. I just say don't do it. Don't you know, if you have Kaspersky or Norton or McAfee, uninstall it. Do you agree?
Well, there's two different audiences out there, right? People listening to this podcast, I think, are smart enough that they don't need to worry about this other stuff. There are certain things you should do to be prudent. You know, from time to time, you should run anti-malware scans and that kind of thing. I don't use third-party anything like that.
Grandpa shouldn't install an antivirus because what happens... often I'm talking to completely novice users on the radio show, is they go, I'm safe. I installed an antivirus. Now,
false sense of
security. I don't have to worry about anything.
Right.
Yeah. And in fact, they do
still. You need to be careful online is what you need to do.
Right. Only one-third of antiviruses caught WannaCry. So that means it didn't protect you. It caused all sorts of compatibility issues. I hear from people all the time whose security software is blocking things.
But you've just touched on that thing that I was sort of just referring to, that the big advances Microsoft is making with anti-malware, anti-virus, anti-spyware, whatever it is basically AI-based, and it's predictive stuff. In other words, we're not doing the TSA thing where we're fighting the previous battle and protecting against a thing that's never going to happen again. We're looking at the behavior of software, and we're trying to determine if it's malicious or not before it ever gets a chance to do its thing. And today, those capabilities are basically just available to the enterprise. And hopefully it will be like airbags in cars and other safety features like that, where they, it comes down to everybody at some point. I mean, and I just hope it doesn't take too long, because I think that stuff is important. And then maybe that false sense of security will just be a real sense of security.
You do, though, say in your article, Paul, that this is a positive move from Microsoft.
Yeah, because Microsoft does have these partners, and these companies are supporting shared customers.
Right.
In other words, someone who has bought a Kaspersky suite because of whatever reason shouldn't be lied to about which thing is running, which Windows 10 does. It shouldn't have the thing you purchased and wanted to use, regardless of its merits, turned off silently in the background without your knowledge. I don't think it's necessary. I'm not going to run it.
I understand why Microsoft did. Mm-hmm. What if the software you bought caused problems and Microsoft knew it would cause problems and turn it off?
Well, I don't think they're going to, I mean, that's a different situation, obviously.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with Microsoft acting against that kind of thing, but that's not really what we're talking about here, hopefully.
I'm not convinced, and I should point out that the U.S. yeah. Army has said do not install, you know, the military is not allowed to use Kaspersky because of the alleged association with the Russian government and the FSB, the Russian Secret Service.
Okay.
I know everybody likes Eugene Kaspersky, but if I were a spy,
you know,
I'd be damn likable.
You know who he reminds me? This guy reminds me of Jean-Louis Gasset a little bit from a personal perspective. And I do feel, just from a soapbox kind of point of view, that people like this are important and that they call to attention things that are happening that are real. And in this case, you know, Microsoft's behavior against these firms and against the customers that they share who were using these products was real. And he really did raise legitimate issues. I don't think there was a single crank, you know, episode in there. It was all real. So I think we can just kind of move past this. This won't impact most of the people who are listening to this show, because they probably are smarter than this. But I mean, again, you're going to get online. I mean, I have smart friends who are accountants and bankers and lawyers even, and they use a computer and they turn into a babbling idiot. And I don't know what they're doing with their computers exactly, but I do know that I've had to deal with the repercussions from time to time, because they're like, hey, this thing's not working. Could you come over here? And you're looking at this otherwise intelligent person, and you're like, what are you doing on your computer? What is this? You know, it's crazy. Like, my kid, I could get it. You know, like a 47-year-old adult, it doesn't make any sense. But, you know, there it is.
Yeah.
Do they need Kaspersky? No, they need common sense.
Well, in a way, I mean, I understand why you applaud Microsoft. Frankly, I think the right thing to do would be to make their gosh darn operating system more secure.
Yes.
To protect the users so they didn't need to buy third-party security apps.
What was that thing called? OneCare.
Yeah.
It was OneCare, right?
Do it right. And, you know, gosh darn it, they took their time to protect people like Kaspersky. They took two versions of Windows. They said, all right, now, we're not going to let you hook the kernel unless you really have to. And stuff like that, you know? I mean, it's just I think Microsoft was over-judicious in protecting Kaspersky.
It's been downhill for Windows ever since they let the graphics stack it in the kernel. That was the beginning of the end right there.
I'm an old fart. I know. All right, moving on. Enough. I hear you, Paul. Windows 10 Pro for workstations. Wait a minute. What the hell is that?
I know.
I thought we were only going to have two SKUs.
Yeah, wasn't that the goal 22? At one point? Yeah, so now we're adding yet another new addition to the Windows 10 lineup as of Fall Creators Update, and it's called Windows 10 Pro for Workstations. So you both, I'm sure, remember good old NT Workstation.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Used it.
So this is kind of like that, right? It's meant for power users. It's meant for people who, you know, they don't want to run a server, but they need things like the REFS, Resilient File System, persistent memory, faster file sharing, expanded hardware support. So this is for them. And Microsoft says the reason they created this edition was based on feedback from the Windows insiders. So that's how they're saying this came about. And it was rumored, I think the slide that is in everybody's blog post saying introducing Windows 10 Pro for Workstations leaked about a month ago, and people were wondering, is that real? Is that really going to happen? And they announced, yes, it is. So it's coming. I'm not against the idea of having a pro version, but like a version for people who need this extra power. But I feel like we're really getting out of control with how many editions of Windows 10 there are right now, and it's getting harder and harder to figure out what is going on. Like, people will be like, so which version should I run? And I know if you're a home user, it's pretty obvious. You run home, right? But all this there is, are all these others.
it's stupid. This is a known issue with product version proliferation.
We call it skew creep.
Yeah.
I don't remember which version of Office it was that started this, 2007, maybe 2010. I don't know. But all of a sudden, one day, there were like 13 versions of Office, you know. Yeah. We see this today in Office 365. Again, you know, consumer and business versions is all kinds of these things. And I really, over time with Windows, they actually started cutting back a bit, right? Vista was the big bad one that had Home Basic, Home Premium, Business. Yep. I don't remember all of them. There were a bunch of Starter, whatever it was. There were a bunch of them. And I hate to see this happen. I know why it's happening.
Why? Right?
Why? Yeah. Why? Sure.
They haven't told us how much this is going to cost, right? Or how you're going to get it. But my guess would be it's going to be a paid upgrade from Pro, right?
Of course it is.
So,
and it's going
to
be
always
very
looking for more ways to make money, right? And yeah, so that's why there are more additions,
actually,
right?
Give it away. You know what? Give away a base edition and then charge an upsell. That's the premium. That's
everything
the premium
else.
Model, and it works so well in app stores.
But you don't have 17 choices, you know, like.
No. Most people still get Windows preloaded on a PC, right? Like, that is how most people get it. But then if you're in a company, your company may say, oh, some people here need enterprise, so we have to pay to upgrade from Pro to enterprise for those people. And now there's going to be this new Pro version.
I got a conspiracy theory.
Yes.
So Microsoft, we're giving away the operating system. What they're going to start doing is almost everybody get Windows 10S.
Some people think that's going to happen.
Everybody gets 10S. Sure. That's the base unit. Free for life.
Right.
If you ever want to do anything.
You get what you pay for.
Yeah. I don't think that's actually a bad model, both economically for Microsoft and even for end users.
They go, jeez. I mean.
I'm not saying charge $150 for Pro.
Windows 10 Home would be about a million times better for those purposes.
Well, but from Microsoft's point of view, you don't want to make the base unit be too good.
Exactly. Because then nobody will ever upgrade.
Home is all you need, really. It's all most anybody needs, except for enterprise users.
Yep.
So they haven't said that. They haven't said that S is going to replace Home or S will become the new low-end SKU. But that could be interesting if they go that way.
Yeah, they need to meet a bar for that, though, where it just needs to be more applicable across a wider range of use cases than it is now, which is zero.
If you have more use cases, you have to buy a little bit better.
This reminds me of the luxury car segment. If you look at companies like BMW and Mercedes, where they used to have three main product lines, and now they have about 131 different variants of each.
I think it's more like Tesla, where there's a base model. And they say it's, we'll use the new Model 3. It's $35,000 for a Tesla. And then you look at it. Oh, but do you want wheels? Oh, you want, No, but they do give you wheels. You could drive out the door with a base model Model 3 and it would work. But if you want any performance or you want, you know, any features, you up. And
I think
what you're
saying, though, is it should be like that, but it actually isn't, because the problem with the Windows 10 SKUs is that they're not all strict supersets of each other.
No, I know. They need to. That needs to be fixed.
They're all over the map, but that's what I'm saying. You know, in other words, you could buy like I don't even know the models anymore, but like a BMW, you know, 5 Series sedan, but then there's a 6 Series
you don't want to
X
do that.
Something that has like a hatchback on the back, or it's like, you know, whatever.
There should be BMW, and then you can buy, for $1,000, you can buy 6. You could buy a 3. Yeah. You know, you can up it.
Sure.
And I think that, to me, I don't know. There's a certain clarity that comes with your computer, just like this laptop, this Surface laptop, comes with 10S.
This is the problem for Microsoft.
$50,
when you buy
make
that
Pro.
You buy that laptop, And it comes with S, which is free to you, essentially. Or not really, but let's say it's free. And then you realize it doesn't work for you, which you will. And you'll spend $50 or whatever it is.
$50 you get Pro. $100 you get Workstation. $150 you get whatever.
Enterprise.
This still doesn't work for Microsoft. Because that's just – it's still a one-time payment. And it's still a device you're going to use for several years.
Right.
You know, the enterprise model makes tons of sense for Microsoft because it's an ongoing subscription payment.
Subscribe to Pro. It's only $30 a year.
Yeah.
Listen, if you want to help Apple sell Macs, make Windows 10 Pro a subscription service. Like, they can't do that. And I just think, given that they can't
haven't.
Do it.
Yeah.
No, they haven't. But given that they can't and won't, this other thing is exactly what you basically said, which is it's just a money grab. We notice premium PCs are, you know, going gangbusters right now. How can we squeeze that market? Imagine if Microsoft required Windows 10 Pro to take advantage of hardware-accelerated graphics. That would mean that every single gaming PC would basically have another $50 fee built into it
I could totally see them doing that.
But does the tennis not work with – well, I guess you can't. You can only run games in the UWP games. So. Yeah.
Can only run the store apps? Yeah. Games? They work fine.
So you say money grab, right? But remember, Microsoft's job is to grab money. They're a company, right?
Yes, okay.
Like, this is what they do, right? And so they're trying to find ways to monetize Windows. You know, said it's a business that's going down.
You're right, but it's still a money grab because you already paid for the Windows on this thing. Windows 10 S is never free. Windows 10 S costs about the same as Windows 10 Home to a PC maker. It's
Yeah.
It's
well, we don't know how much we don't know how much PC makers are paying for Windows 10 S, actually.
Okay, but we're still there's
it might be free. It might be free. It might be a dollar. It might be remember that old SKU they did with Bing and they really dropped the price to OEMs. They're like, hey, if you'll preload Bing, we'll charge you like a buck.
You would have heard this if this was true. It's not.
I don't know. I've asked. I've tried to find out the price that OEMs are paying.
I was actually told it was very close to Pro.
I can't find out. So, yeah, I mean, I think they're just trying to find ways to monetize Windows. And I'm not saying it's fun if you're a consumer, but I get what they're doing, you know. But the part I don't like is how confusing it is about which edition you're supposed to use. And, you know, some people say, well, you don't have to worry about the mobile editions if you're using a PC. And you don't have to worry about the enterprise edition if you're a home user. Okay, but it's just the idea that, like, when you go on their page, like, look at all these different editions, you know. It's like, wow.
Well, there's also the huge, you know, kind of gotcha moment that occurs, especially with Windows 10 S, but with other versions as well. If you need some kind of a feature, you know, you just found out about Hyper-V and you're like, my God, that solves all my problems. That's exactly what I need. And then you go to try to find it and it's not in there and you like contact Microsoft support. Why? It says this is here and I don't see it. What version of Windows are you running? Windows 10 Home. Oh, that's why you don't get it. You can upgrade for $100 to Windows 10 Pro. Oh, that's gotcha. You know, I mean, that's how it feels to the consumer. To them, they already own this thing. They don't understand, you know, it's like I bought the car thing that Leo was just talking about. Like, what do you mean the radio's extra? What do you, I want to listen to FM. I got
to
pay.
You have to give them a usable base. And I disagree with you that Office 10S is unusable. I think that's a usable base.
Oh, I think disagree,
it's. It's usable for people like me. I'm going to say it again.
You can use Notepad on it.
No, it's not. But it isn't.
The OS is usable for me. It's usable for me.
Usable is not the same as barely usable.
When I use the Surface laptop, I found the laptop not that great. I found the OS okay. I prefer Chrome, but I could use Edge.
Something horribly wrong with you, but
I'm normal.
You are normal. No, you are normal, and there's nothing wrong with being normal. In fact, it's preferable. But I mean, but like I said, you will eventually. You ran into an issue with a printer, for example, but forgetting that, there always will, and that's what I mean. It's you know you can use a laptop. So weeks, be like, I can
there
use
was
this,
one but, thing. There was one thing. I didn't have an extension to Edge to turn off video autoplay. That was one thing that I was like, okay, hold on.
Okay.
Deal breaker.
That could be fixed, right? That could be fixed. But actually, it's funny.
Those are minor little things.
Fairly minor.
Okay.
I'll fix them. They're not minor in the sense they don't mean anything, but they're fixable.
but it doesn't mean they're going to be fixed. And more important, doesn't mean that there always won't be something else, because there always will be something else. That's the problem. Yeah. Microsoft has invented a version of Windows that does not run Windows applications. That's insane when you say it that way. But the other thing that people forget is it's also – no, but it's not just Windows applications. It's every little driver utility set that you get for any hardware device installs a Win32 something that you are not getting. And that either means it's not going to work at all, or it's not going to work as well as it would if you just had a normal version of Windows, which, by the way, cost you nothing. Nothing. You can get it for free. It is unsuitable for everybody today.
Disagree.
Will that change? No. I hope so.
Not everybody.
Everybody. I've already made the case why. Because there will be a thing for everybody. There we go.
Oh, no, Mary Jo.
No, in other words,
personally agree with you, Mary Jo, but...
No, it's Wednesday, and you're using your computer, and it's working fine. You use Notepad, use whatever you use. Edge is fine for some reason for you. It's fine. Yeah. Video's autoplay, but you can live with that. It's fine.
They can fix that.
What I'm saying is on Friday, or 2 weeks from now, or a month from now, some new service, some new application, some new something, some new hardware device, whatever is gonna come out, and your friends are all going to be like, hey, I'm using this thing. And you're like, oh, that's really interesting. It's the Windows Phone problem again.
Paul,
you can't
for a small fee, you can upgrade and it'll work.
And also, I would say if you are somebody writing apps right now and you're not writing a UWP app and you have to be writing a UWP app and not a 132 app anymore.
Why?
Why? Because
a 132 app will run on 1.5 billion computers. And a UWP app will run on a subset of those computers.
You're starting to sound like Jerry Pornell or something. You sound like you belong in the
1990s.
So a Win32 app will run on 1.5 billion computers. But after 2020, Windows 7 is no longer supported, right? And that's not that far away.
Well, we still have Windows 8.1 as well.
Yeah, but what's that? A few more years after that. I'm just saying, I think we're arguing about something...
Well, I'm sorry. But we also have Windows 10. Let's not forget Windows 10 also runs Win32 apps and always will. So even though there's one version of Windows 10 that doesn't, the rest of them do.
I feel like Microsoft, well, we all were stunned by the idea that Microsoft was going to give away Windows forever. This solves kind of the problem that they might face. And it's, by the way, there's plenty of precedent for it. Not in operating systems, I agree, but in freemium. Right. Freemium is the number one category in the App Store right now because they give it away and then people upgrade if they want more.
Let's reach an agreement here. Let's at least say this. I'm right. No. No. I think the honestly, I would be okay with Windows 10S with a couple of concessions. And I think most people would be okay, and I mean like 90-something percent of people would be okay with Windows 10S with one concession. And that one concession is that you treat us like adults and you let us go through a series of steps to get that one thing we want running on that system. And so, in other words, like let's say for you it was Google Chrome. It was like the one thing you had to have. Let me install Google Chrome. That's it. And I will never install anything else ever again. I just want to use this one thing. It may impact performance by 3%, or it may impact the reliability of the system by 7%, or whatever these numbers are. But you, as an adult who purchased a product, are making this decision for yourself. I you know, they can put these little blocks up there, but they're all fake. Windows 10S runs Win32. There's Win32 apps all over it. It's they're installed on the system when you buy it. It's arbitrary.
Like Notepad, right?
Like Notepad. Yep. Yes. Yep. I just think there's a compromise that can be made. The problem with Windows 10S is that it's too much of a hard stop. It's a goal. It's a laudable place to get for Windows. It's just not ready here in 2017. Mm-hmm. So you let people crack through the firewall a little bit to do the one or two things that they want. Yeah. And that's it. It's easy.
Yeah. I still feel like a big I still feel like a big reason they did 10S is to try to keep trying to make Edge gain some momentum. So that's why they don't want Chrome on there. And I think that one's going to be the one that's like, absolutely not.
So, okay, here's another alternate future for Windows in general, but let's say Windows 10S specifically, which is that sometime in the future, possibly during the lifetime of the Fall Creators Update, but more likely maybe the next version, Windows or Microsoft Edge will be updated to support the full capability list for progressive web apps. And Microsoft has said in the past, I think as recently as Build, that they would put progressive web apps in the store. And when I look at the available selection of like UWP apps that are in the store today, I find them to be very lacking. But more important, I find them to be lacking compared to high-quality web apps like Google Inbox or Google Calendar or the new Outlook.com beta, which is fantastic. If those things were available in the store and had offline capabilities and all the other neat things you can do, notifications, all that kind of stuff, local storage access, whatever, and were packaged in application windows that didn't look like an Edge web browser, it's still running the Edge web engine, obviously. Suddenly Windows 10S becomes a lot more viable. In many ways, it's not just desktop apps. Like the alternative to a high quality desktop app in the store is usually lousy. Yeah. The equivalent on the web app side is often pretty damn good.
Look at LinkedIn, right?
Yeah.
I think LinkedIn's a good example.
Yeah. Yep. And by the way, a year from now, if that happens and you say, well, actually, I think Windows 10S would be applicable for a lot of people, I would say I agree with that, actually.
You know, I do. So I like your thinking there a lot. And I, you know what I'm surprised about? So I was looking at Ignite at the session list again. There's only one session on progressive web apps at Ignite.
Yeah.
And it feels like, why is this taking so long, right?
I don't know. I find, you know, it's frustrating. Edge is frustrating. Yeah. And you know, each version of Windows 10 that comes down the pike, I write an article about here's where I'm at with Microsoft Edge. Yeah. And I go through the list of things like this is what it doesn't do. And in each version, they one to three or four of those items gets removed because they do improve it over time. One of the neat things that they fixed in the Fall Creators Update, which is actually pretty profound, is just basic performance. And so previous to the Fall Creators Update, if you right-clicked on anything in that browser, there was like a second of a pause, and then that new style UWP context menu would appear, and it would draw, and it was slow. And now when you right-click on something, it just kind of pops right up like you would expect of a right-click menu on a modern computer. And so, you know, I know that sounds silly, but that's actually kind of a big deal. It still doesn't support these kind of modern web app, you know, features like I mentioned for progressive web apps. It still doesn't do the full slate of web notifications like Edge, like Chrome and Firefox and Safari probably do. It's got a ways to go. And I'll keep looking at it. I'm not like, you know, I don't mean forever. I mean, I'm going to keep looking at it, but I hope it gets better in the next version to the point where I could use it as well. But today, not so much.
Yeah. That's why it's so, going back to the original thing in our notes, it's so surprising they're going to make Windows 10S available for Surface Pro. Like, to me, I'm just like, why? Right?
Well, okay. So, but remember, everyone thinks of Windows 10S as this Chromebook competitor, which it is on one level. But as I've been saying all along, all the way back to Windows 10 Cloud back in February, whatever, I mean, Microsoft has always intended for this thing to run on high-end, desirable hardware that real people would want. And they saw a market for this where it was maybe an executive or someone at the company who has some specific set of needs. And I guess to your point, they do have telemetry data that shows what people are doing. And I know that a lot of people, I think it's over 50% of the time spent on Windows 10 is spent on the web. And they know what's available in the store, and they know that if they add Office to the store, what they're doing is it skews really highly toward this audience. Now, what's missing still, obviously, Chrome is the big one, but and then some other things. But my basic issue with this system is the same as it was for Windows Phone, which is that all it takes is that one thing. And the problem is there will always be that one thing. That even if that one thing, that the auto video playback thing you were talking about in Chrome and Edge, I don't know if that extension is there today.
No.
I thought they did release one, but maybe not. But even if they solved that, so someone comes up with an extension, it would be pretty easy to do. Again, like I said, I think down the road you're going to run into that the next one thing. You know, yeah. There's always going to be a one thing. That's the thing. No, there is. I mean, it's just the
No, I'm laughing because you just said thing twice. I was just laughing at that. That's all. I'm laughing with you, not at you.
So, there you go. Windows 10S, Microsoft.
Windows 10S in a nutshell.
Yeah. You'll be delighted to hear, by the way, that I am, now that I've just said everything I just said, I'm actually refocusing the field guide on Windows 10S.
Nice. It's your comeuppance.
I am the world's biggest hypocrite.
That's why he hates it. He has to write it.
Exactly, because he's writing yet another field guide.
Well, no, not yet another one. It's the same book. But, you know, one thing I will say for Windows 10S that I like just kind of conceptually is that I mentioned earlier that a lot of the Windows 10 versions are not necessarily subsets or supersets of other versions. They're just kind of scattershot feature sets. Windows 10S is a pure subset of the other versions of Windows 10. So it is actually a starting point. And so you can go from Windows 10S and say, well, here are the things that make Home that version. Here are the things that make Pro that version. It's basically the only version of Windows 10 you can do that for in a very clean way. And so if you target Windows 10S from like a book perspective, obviously you'd have to cover other stuff too, but you know that every single thing you're writing about there applies to everybody.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
It does. It's like the least common denominator, right?
Yes, it is. Right. Exactly. Which is what you're always looking for in a product.
We should bring Brad in because doesn't Brad think Windows 10S is awesome?
Yeah, he's an idiot. So, no, he made the same contention that Mary Jo is making, which is that the way he put it was so beautiful. He said, it's almost ready for me. And I was like, so
he gave
almost
you
ready
a big fat opening.
It's not ready. And then, you know, the 4-inch part is that, it's that thing where we all have our own different workflows and our different apps that we're used to using and all that kind of stuff. And so depending on your needs, like you were saying, like, web browser and Notepad pretty much is maybe, 90% of what you need. Mail app, whatever. You're like, this would work for me day to day. But, Joe over here or Bob over here, we all have different, everyone has these different needs.
Yeah,
right?
For sure. Yep.
And, so I don't, personally, I don't actually feel it's ready, but I've already made that case.
You have.
I don't want to risk another gong.
No, you don't.
Eighth generation. What didn't we just get Kaby Lake? Intel's eighth generation a new one?
Yep.
Yeah.
Which one is this? What lake is this?
Coffee Lake.
I do like the name Coffee Lake.
Yeah, I do too.
It reminds me of a giant lake filled with steam.
I have a coffee lake right here. Look at this thing.
Dunkin' Donuts.
The size of my Paul's coffee lake.
That is a lake of coffee.
That is
I heard
so good.
Large cappuccino.
So good. Is that a that's not a Therat mug. Why aren't
you find that.
Branded mugs?
I can't believe you're
drinking that black. Do you really drink black coffee?
No, except cold brew.
Oh, cold brew is
awesome.
Yeah,
because
it's not bitter. It's very smooth.
Yeah.
Cold brew.
Smooth as a summer morning, Leo.
Yeah.
So Coffee Lake is going to be announced next week.
Yeah.
Yep.
I know.
Eighth generation. So what is new about Coffee Lake?
Microsoft, you're right out the gate with a new Surface device.
Oh, God, I hope not.
Oh, man, I know. Yikes. But we don't know all the details. We know it's going to be announced on the 21st. It'll still be using 14 nanometer architecture. What else do we know? Do we know anything else? I don't think we know a ton of other things yet. Oh, the one thing we do know that I find interesting is Intel is saying there will be devices using Coffee Lake out this holiday and possibly sooner. So there are already OEMs who've built PCs and tablets or whatever else using Coffee Lake.
That has usually been the case, right? They often announce these products late summer and the first ones come out. But I don't follow this part of the hardware world very closely. But off the top of my head, I would say it seems to me that in recent years, Intel hardware generations, like chipset generations, have rolled out over time so that, you know, they'll announce a new chipset, let's say every August, but, you know, the first couple of months, maybe they come out with the desktop part.
Right.
And then in right around January, CES happens and they come out with the mobile part, and all the PC makers will announce their mobile products, and those things all happen in the spring. And then they'll have like a high performance version for gamers and all that stuff. And then August rolls around again and they do the next gen. So it's not like a, it's not like they're releasing
all
like 13
once.
Different versions. Yeah, I don't think so. You know, that's not, how I perceive it.
Yeah, I think that's how they're doing it these days for sure.
Yeah,
and so we don't know what's first.
Yeah,
it does. Because then you're like, wait, are we hearing about Coffee Lake again?
Yeah,
right?
Didn't we actually hear about that? I think we're also hearing these, what are these 18 core processors or sixth generation processors? And those are just now coming out. So
and
those are
sixth
Sky
generation
Lake.
Was called what again?
Sky. I think those are Skylake. So
Skylake.
They're releasing.
Yeah, Skylake.
They're releasing new Skylake processors.
Those problems
still.
Were 6 years ago, Leo. I don't even know what we're talking about anymore. They're fine. They're fine.
Yeah.
This is a 14. It's still a 14 nanometer process, although they're calling it. And this is a little confusing. 14 nanometers plus. I think it should be 14 nanometers minus. But
yeah.
I'm just saying.
It's 13.5 nanometers, but who's counting?
Is it? See, what's been a part of the problem I have with Intel is that these aren't a lot faster, a lot more efficient. These are at this point almost minor upgrades, aren't they? Am I wrong?
I think of Gabby Lake as a mulligan for Skylake in many ways. Right? It's almost a chance to silicon's hard, right? Because you can only fix so much in software. In many ways, the biggest, there were little tiny, you know, single digit gains, performance, battery life, whatever. But the big gain there, I think, was probably reliability.
Reliability in what way? It doesn't melt.
Well, in that it doesn't contribute to the underlying instability of the computer that runs on top of the platform. You know, it's just more reliable out of the gate, so to speak. CPU term. See how I did that? Than its predecessor.
Yeah, so it's the same day as the Eclipse that they're launching.
I should have called it.
Oh, so we're never going to get these products anyway because the world's going to end.
The world's going to end.
Exactly.
The dragon is swallowing the sun on Monday. So.
Quiver before your angry god, you non-scientific numbnut.
I'm just looking. God, and then, of course, Anantech is talking about Canon Lake.
Don't say anything on that yet. Don't say that. That's gonna my code name of the week.
Oh, I just...
And also, if I'm not mistaken, they have already talked about the one after that. Oh, that is also you. Oh,
code name.
That other thing that we're not talking about.
Sandy Bridge, Ivy Bridge, Broadwell, Haswell, Sky Lake, KB Lake, and...
See, that would be a good series of children's books right there.
Yeah, B is for Broadwell. The little chip that could. Is there anything else to say about the?
Not a lot.
Coffee Lake. Yeah. I think when they go to a new process, when they go to a 10 nanometer process, then you could say, it's 4 nanometers smaller, Leo.
They'll do that just in time for ARM to move to, you know, whatever, 8 nanometers or something.
Right. In our write-up on ZDNet, which I didn't do, our chip guy did, he said it's widely expected the desktop versions of the i7 and i5 processors will be bumped to 6-core. The core i3 will go to quad-core along with some Pentium and mobile chips. So that's what they're thinking is going to happen Monday.
You're talking about the 8th
generation.
Interesting.
Yes.
Yep. I feel like I never got to know Kaby Lake at all.
Kaby Lake, we hardly knew ye. We don't even know how to pronounce it.
Barely any content. Right, except for the name pronunciation.
I have to say, I have in my hands a Kaby Lake computer.
Sure.
BFD.
You feel comfortable picking that up? You don't think that's going to explode in your hand
BFD,
or anything?
I don't notice any difference. Thunderbolt 3 came last generation, right? But I do agree with you, Paul. I think
what am I looking at there? That's obviously a ThinkPad, but that looks like Mac OS X in the middle. What's running on that?
It's see if you can guess.
Okay. I can guess.
See if you can guess. I think it's quite beautiful myself.
Look at me, like, walking right into this like an idiot.
Yeah, okay. You
I think it's
did
quite
walk right
beautiful in. Myself.
So wow. What version?
It's all got right, menus.
God, I'm going to ask this question. What
it's
is this?
This is Linux, obviously. and the GNOME 3 desktop. We were having a little debate behind the scenes in the chat room. Everybody has these old, I think, outdated notions about Linux. Oh, it's too fragmented, too hard to use. Oh, just trying to install a program. Yeah. And modern distros like Solus or Ubuntu or my favorite Antergos, which is based on Arch, actually handle all. And thanks in no small part to Intel putting all this stuff in the system on a chip now, handle, I think, in terms of hardware compatibility exactly as well. This is a Windows 10 machine.
I'm so sorry, I asked this question.
But no, I think they're elegant. I think it's beautiful. I think the issues with fonts, the issues with installation of software, all have been solved in the last year. Say again?
High DPI displays.
Yep. GNOME supports high DPI. But even better than that, GNOME has the ability to increase the font size by a percentage, kind of like the DPI slider on Windows 10. So you can kind of pick what you want. And I feel like we have come surprisingly
long. Wow, this thing sounds great, Leo. Where do I buy it?
You can't. It's free, Paul. No.
I don't understand.
No, but
are there different SKUs?
But it did surprise me because this is a Kaby Lake processor. Yep. This is all. It's Thunderbolt 3, all of this stuff. And it just installed. It's fine. I know. I see it all. No problem.
And
that's
that the
of late
X1 that we have.
This is the this is the T470S. ThinkPads and Dells, there's certain models that seem to handle, open operating systems better. FreeBSD installed on this as well. And I really think that that's hardware I think a lot of the chip stuff is handled now outside the operating system, which makes it easier. Anyway, I think people should who are refugees from an increasing.
Sure.
So this is, and I think Microsoft, this is a problem that 10S maybe is supposed to handle, is that Mac OS and Windows 10, they're old operating systems, they're crufty, they're getting baroque,
and that's part of the rationale behind Windows 10S, but. Again, they can't really exercise Win32 from Windows, and so they've come up with this other solution.
Understand.
But,
I wish they
yeah, it's
would,
tough.
Though. I
it's
wish
a tough, would. No, but it's a tough problem. This goes back to the thing I used to talk about this about iOS and Android, compared to Windows. Is it better to start with something small and build capabilities onto it, or is it better to start with something big and hairy and try to trim off the fat? And neither one of them is a great approach, but I think the starting with a smaller base thing is ultimately the thing that's going to win out.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. It's an intriguing world we're living in because we have come to we're mature. We're in our golden
yes,
years.
We are
mature now. And that's Intel's problem. I mean, now they've got Coffee Lake.
Right.
Try and explain to people why this is going to be better. Mm. Is it?
This is the same problem with Windows. You can't explain to people. All you do is wait for them to buy a new computer.
Right.
And you can make these advertisements where you say, hey, unless you have this, you can't do this, this, and this. And I think the average PC.
You can't make that ad anymore. I don't think you can make that ad anymore.
No one cares. Mm-hmm.
Even if you, but not only that, what can't you do?
Right.
With a 4-year-old computer in most cases, what can't you do?
Right.
So I feel like
it came with Windows 10S. Bam, nailed it.
Right, now that's why they keep adding all these new things to Windows 10, right? Like holographic and all that.
No,
they're trying
needs.
To make people have a reason.
Yes, they're putting fins on a Cadillac.
In the Windows world.
It's the same problem in smartphones these days.
Yeah,
there's a little bit of a plateau. This happens.
Yep.
But there is a little bit of a plateau, and I don't understand why Intel is still on this yearly chip upgrade cycle. I could see if you're going to 10 nanometers. Now that's a smaller process. That means less heat, lower power.
By the way, it's very clear they would have done this already if they could have.
I, right.
the Intel 10 nanometer thing is
that may not happen.
Probably the backle we just haven't heard the story of. This is so clearly a need.
There are breakthroughs out there. I mean, I did a great interview, and we're going to air it later for Triangulation and the new Screensavers, with a guy who was an expert, wrote his thesis on, remember gallium arsenide? This was a replacement for silicon. Well, now there's gallium nitride. And instead of building a wafer all out of gallium nitride, they still make a silicon wafer because that's easy to grow. But they put a small, thin substrate of gallium nitride on top of it and then dope the nitride. You're doping the GaN, not the silicon, to make it conductive, right? These are semiconductors. Yeah. But the thing about gallium nitride, he explained it to me like I was a four-year-old, is, which I am, is that it's slipperier. And so electrons can travel through it literally 200 times faster.
Wow.
So, now it's not, his company is using it for FETs and ICs mostly in analog power and amplifier analog circuitry, because the digital circuitry, they haven't solved that problem yet. But once they do, once they really, there are some issues with digital, but not intractable, he thought, and I kind of agree that they're probably not. Once they do, that's an example of a technology that, 3 years or 4 years from now, Intel will say, our first gallium nitride processors are out, and they're 10 times faster.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing is what Intel and everybody else is kind of waiting for, because then you can say, now, I don't know what you'd do with a 10 times faster computer, but I'm sure we'll come up with something. Well, for machine learning, that's a real power hog.
They could add like acrylic effects to Notepad, and that you could sort of see through.
Hey, don't give them any ideas.
So in other words, there are breakthroughs out there. 10 nanometers tough. You're getting really down to the end of Moore's law. You're getting to quantum mechanics starts getting becoming more important than Newtonian. So. And I'm sounding like I know what I'm talking about, and I know, but I do think
compared to me, you do know what you're talking about.
I don't know anything about this. Yeah. Well, but this, when Intel says eighth generation and this is the third generation on 14 nanometers.
Yeah.
Isn't it third? I think so. Mm. And ARM's not, ARM's a little bit ahead of them.
Yep.
But anyway.
In some ways, in this way. Yeah.
Somebody's saying silicon is everywhere. Where do you get gallium? It's a byproduct of aluminum production. So when you mine bauxite and you make aluminum, you got all this gallium just flowing around. Now you can actually buy gallium's non-toxic. You can buy it on Amazon, and it melts. It melts at 98.6. So it's a metal that you put in your hand, and it just goes.
It's like mercury. You can drink it.
Go ahead, drink it. I remember when I was a kid, my dentist, before he did my filling, would say, isn't this cute, the mercury? And he put the mercury on his hand and say, come on, play with it. Do you remember that?
He used to play with it. Yeah. He used to play with it. My dad would bring it home from work and we'd put it on the floor.
I am told that gallium is non-toxic, but that's what they told me. They dentist told me that mercury wouldn't hurt me either. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I got off.
No, I'm trying not to make a Windows 10S joke here. But all right,
Windows 10S, it won't hurt you.
The future Windows 10S users.
I like 10S. It's easy to use. I can.
This guy.
I can.
You're
do
a hater.
Yes,
I know. I'm
really
sorry. I know. I'm terrible. Really I'm overtired. In my defense.
Okay. Well, then I think you'd probably be more exciting at talking about .NET Core 2.0.
Yeah.
Sure.
I should let you talk about this since you've been programming lately.
Yeah.
But I can talk about just the verbiage around this, and then you can fill us in on what it actually means. Okay, so this week Microsoft released .NET Core 2.0. So .NET Core is one of many flavors of .NET. Microsoft used to just have the .NET framework, and a few years back they forked the .NET framework and they created this thing called .NET Core. And the idea was .NET Core would be a subset of the .NET framework, and it would run on a lot of different operating systems, not just Windows. It would run on Mac, It would run on Linux.
Linux?
And it would run on Windows.
Settle down.
I know.
Would it run on
Linux? It would run poorly on Linux. I see you forgot that one word.
So the first iteration of .NET Core, when it was one, people weren't really keen on it because they're like, yeah, well, I wrote all these programs for .NET Framework, and it doesn't support almost any of the APIs I've used, so it's kind of not that interesting to me. So what they did with .NET Core 2 was they went back and they added in a whole bunch of the APIs so that people now who wrote a .NET Framework app, they're hoping will say, okay, now instead of just, you know, the 13,000 APIs I had, now we've got 32,000 of the APIs. So maybe it's going to be easier for me to bring my older application or bring at least some of the code over and make it work across all these different operating systems that support .NET. So that's why .NET 2 is interesting. Paul, though, I'm sure has more to say about that since he's actually probably used .NET like me.
Yeah, a little bit. I have. I'm intrigued by this because A, it's open, right? It's developed in the open. Everything.
Yeah, GitHub. It's on GitHub.
Yeah,
right?
GitHub. It's 100% in the open. It's, in fact, I believe Microsoft described it as their biggest open effort, or you know, open source effort. In some ways, .NET Core to me is what .NET should have been all along, because .NET was created as a competitor to Java. It was meant to be this runtime that would, you know, exist where you were, and in the Microsoft world of 2000-2001, that was Windows. You know,
yeah.
These days it's cross-platform, and I think that's actually really cool. It's not. I mean, you could of course create a like an end-user application, I guess, for these things, but really, I think the big focus on this thing is web services and online, or what do you call it? Web services, for lack of a better term,
and server apps too, right?
Yeah, server apps.
Yeah.
And that's why it makes tons of sense on these other platforms as well. Of course, the 1.0 version, it was a very small subset of the standard .NET framework. I don't actually know this off the top of my head. I'm going to guess and say that the namespaces didn't line up either, meaning that you wouldn't just not have the same features. You'd actually have to change your code in some cases, mm-hmm. I think, to get things to run. So obviously with each major release, that gets better. And then there are all kinds of other performance improvements, including performance and so forth, and compatibility across Microsoft's developer tool stack, you know, Visual Studio Code and Visual Studio for Mac, and all that stuff. So, yeah, it's I mean, the stuff I've done in .NET Core has been like command line based. And so this is kind of old school stuff. It's almost like Petzold.NET, where you would go to the console and run Microsoft's compilers, you know, using a command line instruction. You can build these little, just build command line apps to just understand how it works. But yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah.
You know, what's interesting is we talk so much on Windows Weekly about UWP and the idea of having apps, your code that can run across all different variants of Windows. But Microsoft, all up, the bigger company, actually, for them, I would argue .NET Core is a bigger and more strategic initiative because this is where you start going cross-platform, right? And it's not Windows everywhere, but it's .NET everywhere, right?
I always wondered why they called UWP Universal, because it's only universal to Windows, you know, to Windows 10, right? And and I always wonder, I still wonder whether cross-platform is the future of UWP, that they make this stuff work on Android especially, which would make tons of sense, I think. But this is strategically for Microsoft a much more important thing because this speaks to the cloud part of the company, which I think we all agree is the future of Microsoft.
Microsoft,
we all agree with that, right?
Microsoft's getting into the bicycle business. This is good news.
Yep.
I know. That was a pretty funny one. So yesterday they announced they bought a company called Cycle Computing. And I saw people immediately going, wait, bikes?
Bikes?
And, no, nothing to do with bikes. So Cycle Computing is an orchestration software company. And what's interesting to me is they kind of automate workflows for large applications, very large applications, high-performance computing kind of applications, not just in Azure, but also in Google Cloud and Amazon Web Services. So I know some people who cover Amazon who said, oh man, I can't believe Microsoft bought these guys because Amazon was doing a lot with Cycle Computing. So that's kind of a nice little steal if that was the intention. But Microsoft did say, go ahead.
I'm sorry, but they have their own orchestration solutions, well, they work, though, right?
You know what? So there's a lot of different kinds of orchestrators, right? Like Kubernetes is an orchestration type service, right?
Yeah.
And so is Docker, right? And Microsoft works with both of them. But this, to my somewhat limited understanding here, is more about high-performance computing workloads. And what their software did was things like automating workflows for those kinds of applications. Right. And it's not just limited to the cloud, but also could automate workflows for things that were hybrid and on-premises as well. But if you're wondering, if you're a Google Cloud user or an AWS user and you're wondering, will I be able to continue to use Cycles products? The answer is probably no. Microsoft said they're going to support you for some period of time, but they're hoping people will migrate to Azure. And they are going to try to help you to do that. So I think in this case, Microsoft is not going to be continuing the cross-platform vision of the original company that they bought, and instead are going to be taking advantage of it for Azure in the cloud.
Okay.
So nothing to do with bikes, yep. But yeah, interesting stuff.
Unfortunately.
And so there's also this, what is it, Azure Event Grid?
I know.
What is that?
I'm not going to be able to do a great job on this. I wrote it, but I think my understanding of this is somewhat limited, but I'm putting it in the show notes because I know a lot of people were super excited about it. So there's a new service that is in preview as of today in the U.S. only. It's going to be expanding the preview in the coming weeks and months, and it's called Azure Event Grid. So if you know what Microsoft's been doing in serverless computing and AWS and Google, everybody's really jumping on the serverless bandwagon in the cloud these days. This Azure Event Grid service is meant to help developers kind of raise things up a level. So you don't have to worry about the infrastructure and the management. This service is meant to help you if you're writing a serverless app, an IoT app, or almost any kind of an Azure app, take out the pain of integrating the endpoints is how I would describe it. So what Microsoft's doing is they're taking a lot of the different endpoints that they have in Azure. So an endpoint is something like blob storage or event hubs or Azure Functions, which is their serverless platform. And you're going to be able to more easily and at a higher level connect these endpoints and manage them using the service. So people who are doing things like IoT apps, especially, and mobile apps, they think this is pretty cool because it's basically automating at one more level up what Microsoft's been doing in serverless. That's probably as well as I can explain that. So if you want to know more, there's a lot of information on Microsoft's site right now about this, and there's documentation and pricing and the whole nine yards. So look at my post. I've got it all in there.
I tried to read it, and I have to say in my currently out of state,
like,
I have no idea what you're talking about. But it looks great.
I know it was one. You know, sometimes I feel like I semi understand some of the services in Azure cloud, being someone who is not using the cloud. And sometimes I'm like, I understand this at a very theoretical level, and beyond that, I don't really know. But I know when people are excited about it and see a lot of interest on Twitter and in comments and such. So I would say go look that one up.
I enjoy the fact that roughly 10 years after they first announced what was then called Windows Azure, Microsoft can still can just confuse me with anything related to this product.
There's always more services coming at any given point, right?
Yep.
But on my other note here on the cloud stuff, this is not confusing, but it's a little more alarming to me. I don't know if you guys are alarmed by this, but this is about LinkedIn. And so tomorrow, I believe, LinkedIn is going to announce officially this feature that they're adding to LinkedIn messaging, which is called active status. So you know how in Skype you can see when someone's online so you can chat with them? This is adding this to LinkedIn. So if you're online and you're using messaging, someone can see you're online.
But what status types could you have in LinkedIn, like actively looking for a job?
So that's the idea.
To work, but looking for a job.
No, so the idea is, say you're talking to a recruiter, right, through LinkedIn messaging, and the recruiter's asking you these questions. If they see your little green circle, and they're like, okay, the person's there. Let me ask them some follow-up questions. If you see a hollowed-out circle, it means the person isn't there right now, but you could still watch for them. If the person has no circle because they did what I just did and went into my privacy settings and shut this right off, then you know they're not using that.
It sounds like you have a tip of the week.
Yeah. Yes. If you're a person like me who doesn't want people to know your status, that you're online, I don't mind people sometimes sending me a LinkedIn message who are my connections there, but I don't want people bombarding me because they see I'm actively online. So you can go into the privacy setting in LinkedIn, manage your active status. There's a toggle. You can turn it off. So if you would like to do that, it's already active now. I went in and did this yesterday. So even though they're not announcing it until tomorrow, you can go turn this off now. But if you're someone who wants people to be able to chat with you freely, you should leave that on.
Why would anyone want that?
If you're looking for a job, I understand why you want it. If you're using LinkedIn to, keep up with contacts or whatever, there are so many social
the other methods. Supposed uses for LinkedIn.
Well, also, there's so many ways people can connect to you, right? Facebook messaging and email and Teams and this and that. It's just like, oh, man, there's one more.
That's my favorite part about using a smartphone these days, the roulette that occurs every time someone tries to communicate with me. Like, what thing is squawking at me? Is it messaging? Is it Facebook Messenger? Is it, you know, whatever, Skype? You never know.
Yeah.
All right, Mary Jo, take a load off.
Take a little rest.
The smoking light is on because it's time for Xbox.
If I was at peak throughout today, this would be a gongable moment. But I am not. So you can put that gong away. It's not going to happen. I am useless to explain this properly, but you may recall that when Microsoft announced the Xbox Insider program last year, they noted that it would be open to everyone and that it wasn't open to everyone. That basically Microsoft assigned you a ring and then secretly determined which of the four rings in the program you could be a part of. And that only the real insiders that were close to Microsoft ever got to be in the best ring. And I've written editorials about why this is wrong, and it's not how Microsoft handles these insider programs at other parts of Microsoft, whatever. So this past week, they changed it for the third time, I think. And actually, to be fair, they've made it a little more open. And so now, I can't explain this. In the lowest ring in the ghetto part of the system, anyone can get in. That's ring four. Or actually, it's called Omega ring now because they have to change the name every time they change the program. It used to be ring four, and now it's Omega ring. Anyone can get in. Ring three, the next one up, now called Delta, you have to have been in the program for at least 1 month, and you have to have reached Xbox Insider level two or higher. And the way you reach these levels is you perform tasks to the Insider Hub or submit feedback, and that will get you points, and you can move up in the world that way. Beta, which is the second highest ring, was called Beta before. Actually, they didn't change the name of that one. Have to have been in the program for 3 months or more, and you have to have an experience level of four or higher. The Alpha ring, which is the most desirable one, is still invite only. You're not getting into it. From time to time, they invite other people in. So, okay, it's a little more open. I appreciate that. It's still not the same as the other programs and, you know, whatever. But there's also a really confusing matrix that Microsoft has made of how often these guys get updates and how big the updates are, and that what they want to do is make sure people understand what the cost is of this stuff, because depending on how you pay for your bandwidth, it might be expensive. And it's the most confusing, most awful thing in the world, and I'm never going to be able to explain it here, so let's just forget that. The other thing is, and I think this is what people really want from an Xbox Insider program, is they're working with multiple, what they say, first-party and third-party game studios, meaning the Microsoft Game Studios as well as third-party game studios, to bring pre-release game access to insiders. Now, we don't know who they're working with. We don't know how it's going to happen or whether it's going to happen. We can suspect it's going to be Alpha Ring, maybe Beta Ring. But when you think about the Xbox Insider program, because they just released like a major new version of the dashboard because, you know, a year has gone by and they have to do that. It's not that fun testing the dashboard. Nobody uses the Xbox to test the dashboard. What they want to do is play games. And so actually, I think that's kind of a cool thing. So we'll see how that develops. But as of today, they've screwed around with the program yet again, and they've sort of opened it up. The other big Xbox news from this past week was that something called the Xbox Live Creators Program has finally come out, well, or through the system, the first games are finally available. So this is sort of a replacement for ID at Xbox. It's basically a way for anybody to develop games that could be published to the Xbox Store and also to the Game Store for Windows 10. What that means is not just small publishers, but even individuals. And so this is another example of Xbox opening the kimono a little bit, because they used to be, you know, really closed system here. And you can actually go to the your Xbox One console, load the store, and there's a section of the store called Creators Collection. And it's these games that have been developed by individuals or by very small publishers. Some of them are free. The ones that are paid are very low cost. And so I was away when this happened. I was in Barcelona, so I didn't have an Xbox with me. But I was browsing the store through the app just to kind of see what it looked like. And actually, most of these games are kind of kind of unprofessional, actually. But I guess that's what we should expect right out of the bat. But I still think this is a very positive development because, again, any opening of this kind of a system is a good thing. And eventually, as we see in app stores on mobile or wherever else, I think we're going to see some high-quality stuff happen through here. So those games are available on Xbox One and also on Windows 10. Although, interestingly, because the Windows 10 store is so terrible, they're not actually called out in the Windows 10 store. They're just with the other games because they probably look just like most of the other games. Even though they're terrible. And they run a Windows 10S, which is also terrible.
Can Man. I interest you in a Linux install, Paul?
I know. I think you need
to. You know, I'll tell you what. If Microsoft announces two more Windows 10 product SKUs this year, I will
Okay, we're counting.
They might. They might. Yep.
Let's take a little break before we get to the back of the book. Paul's picks, Mary Jo's super secret code name. And well, we still don't know the beer of the week, and that's worth sticking around for. Our show today brought to you by the host for my website, WordPress.com. WordPress is awesome. WordPress runs 28% of all the world's websites. 28%! That's a number so amazing that I think it's probably people go, what? No, that can't be true. It is. I have been using WordPress since 2004, 2005. I ran it myself for a long time on my own server, but that got to be kind of tedious. When I've now moved to WordPress.com, where they run it for you. They do the hosting, by the way, very affordably at less than it used to cost. I used to use a SoftLayer, and a server cost a heck of a lot more. But more to the point, I don't have to spend any time thinking about, you know, patches or updates or anything. It just runs. It just runs beautifully. And it's a community. This is even more important. When you go to WordPress.com, you see a community of websites, people on WordPress.com. In fact, they send traffic from their front page all the time. I have 500,000 followers at the WordPress.com community, which is so awesome. You don't need to hire somebody to run your WordPress site. You don't need experience. You go to WordPress.com, you pick a button, build a website, or start a blog. And you pick initially from a couple of templates and start typing. But as you go, you'll see there are hundreds of beautiful designs to choose from. Your content is always independent of the template, which is nice. So you could switch, you know, how your site looks day to day to suit yourself till you find something you really like. There are so many gorgeous themes. I'm using one called 2017, which gives me a big slideshow on the front, you know, big splash page, and then a kind of a more traditional blog. I love the way I can incorporate in all my social presences. And every WordPress blog gets social sharing. So when you put up a post, it makes it easy for your readers to share it on all the social media sites like Facebook and Twitter and Google+. I love that. Choose a WordPress.com plan. Go right now to WordPress.com/windows to save 15% on your new plan purchase. WordPress.com/windows. Choose a plan. Join that great community. You get a lot of support from other users, but of course they have the best support professionals in the world. Every time I've called them, I've gotten such great information. By the way, I should log into my WordPress. I won't show you my login here. I'll just hide this for a second. But when I log into my WordPress site, and I've turned on two-factor, they support that. Actually, the way it works is I get a push notification on my mobile app, and I just say, yep, that was me trying to log in. Let's go right here. And what was that? Why was I going to show you that? I forgot. Well, just because it's such a beautiful song. Oh, I was going to show you the stats. I was going to show you the stuff behind the scenes. So that's another thing that's really cool about WordPress. Not only does it have great support for all the social networks, it has great support. Well, it's I should phrase it differently. It's supported by everybody else. The WordPress API is the standard. So as a result, I actually don't usually post on the WordPress website. I use software like the great Mars Edit from Daniel Jalka and Red Sweater Software, and I use that and post from that. And it's a standard API. There we go. Verify sign-in. Let me just verify the sign-in real quick. Approve. And now I should be logged into my account, and I can show you what great information you get about users. So let's just look at the stats. You can see, you know, not only visitors, likes, comments. You can see how many posts you've got. You can see where your visitors came from. This all comes with it. It's awesome. What people click on when they leave, what refers you've gotten. It just, this is just today's stats, you know. I love it. WordPress, and they give you lots of insights, too, about when's the best time to post, where you get the most followers from. I think it's fantastic. Look, just try it, okay? It's free to try. And you'll get 15% off any new plan purchase when you go to wordpress.com/windows. Built-in search engine optimization, too, so you always get the best search results. wordpress.com/windows. We thank them so much for their support for my WordPress blog. They say, it's been 2 months since your last post. Okay. There's a little insight there. Okay. And you can see what hits you've gotten and when and all of that. All right. Let's kick things off. Paul Thurrott, your tip of the week. We're almost done, Paul. You can go take a nap any second.
There's no rest for me, Leo. I have an entire home to unpack.
Take a break.
So a couple of months ago, Microsoft announced that it would be finally adding the ability to edit contacts in the Outlook mobile app for iOS and Android, which sounds incredible in 2017 that this app doesn't have this functionality, but there you go. Last week, quietly, they updated that announcement from back in June to note that this feature is now available. In fact, I found out about this from Mary Jo Foley. You may have heard of her. She's on Twitter and stuff.
Yeah.
And
famous.
Yeah. And that's great. And so it works exactly as you would expect. They also added some a much nicer looking contact card, which has kind of a neat area at the bottom where you can see all of the conversations and other communications that you've had with that person, which is one of the reasons you might go into a contact management part of the app. So that's great. So that happened. So if you are using one of these apps, or you have been waiting for this, it's there. If you moved on to something else, I think, I don't know if Mary Jo still uses it, but I want to say she was using 9 for a while, which was kind of a famous replacement for Outlook on mobile devices. You can look at Outlook again if you'd like. It finally does that. The only little caveat here is that contact editing only works right now for Outlook.com and Office 365 accounts. Support for Google accounts is coming soon. Then, that's the only tip I have. And then, so for the app pick, I actually have two. I had a late addition there. But this past week, Microsoft updated OneDrive for iOS, and it was really clearly a major update. They didn't really document it very well, but the version of the app is just 9.1, which doesn't really hint at how big of a change it is. But finally, I think it was yesterday, Stephen Rose wrote a blog post explaining that this, in fact, was a major rewrite of the app, and they've added a ton of new features. And the two big ones are super scanning, which is the ability to scan a document and collate the pages into a single PDF. So in other words, in the past, you could take a picture of each page, but they would be separate documents. Now what it will do is give you the option to say, okay, now here's page 2, here's page 3, and it creates a single PDF. So that's really cool. The other big one is offline folders. The way I understand this is that in the past, the OneDrive app did have offline capabilities, but it was basically on a file-by-file basis. But now you can do what you basically do on a Windows PC, which is say, I want this folder to always be available offline, and it will actually take the whole thing and make sure it stays synced up and is available to you when you're offline. So that's pretty cool. There's some other stuff, but those are kind of the big ones. The other app pick is an app that I don't use, but I'm actually going to test this now that it's available in the Windows Store, and that's called ShareX. I know Brad uses this. I'll just pause momentarily because I know you're going to pop it. Okay. but anyway.
There he is.
Nobody expects the Brad
Savoir faire is everywhere. Anyway, ShareX is a very well-regarded and very full-featured screenshotting solution, and it's now available in the Windows Store. And so there's yet another step toward Windows 10S domination. So if you are using that app, you might want to grab the Windows Store version.
I'm just going to leave the top of Brad's head on the screen.
It never goes away.
Never goes away from now on.
In fact, I think it's right now.
Uh-huh. Do you have a software pick?
Well, that's it. That was it. I jammed them together because I'm literally. If I close my eyes for like more than a second, I'm probably just going to.
Well, let's go to Mary Jo Foley.
I know. I'm going to keep you awake with an exciting enterprise pick, Paul. This enterprise pick has to do with blockchain, which we've talked about on the show a few times. And so, you know, blockchain is the technology that's underneath the Bitcoin cryptocurrency, but in the enterprise world, more and more businesses like banks and retail and hospitals are using it because it also can work like a shared distributed ledger that makes transactions more secure between different participants. So a week ago, Microsoft announced a new framework for a blockchain that's called the COCOA framework. And it's called COCOA because it's short for Confidential Consortium. And what this is, it's not a new ledger. It's not anything like that. It's more of a framework that runs on top of secure hardware and operating systems. How do you explain this well? It's going to do a lot of different things. It's right now in development, I guess I would say. Microsoft talked about it last week. They demoed it. They put out a white paper about it. But it doesn't actually exist for people to use it yet. It's going to be out next year on GitHub for people to actually start using it in their own operations. But what it does is Microsoft's hoping it's going to take away some of the pain points for using Bitcoin inside of enterprise. So it's going to have the ability to make transactions between the participants more private and secure. It's going to also give you governance, because right now, if you want to add participants, there's not really a good centralized way to do that on top of blockchain. And in the end, Microsoft's hoping it will make blockchain more interesting to companies regardless of the platform. And to me, that's very interesting, too. This is not something you have to use on Azure or even on Windows. It's something you can use in your data center. You can use it in a variety of different clouds and with a variety of different ledgers. So here's Microsoft being open again. Seems to be a recurrent theme these days. That's the COCOA framework, the enterprise pick of the week.
I guess they can use COCOA now that Apple doesn't really.
I know, right?
COCOA, though.
Different COCOA,
C-O-C-O. Yeah, they spell it differently, but
they do. Yeah. They do.
And everybody thought that I gave away your code name of the leak when I meant week, not code name of the leak. That would be another interesting tidbit when I mentioned Cannon Lake. But we're not talking about KB Lake, Coffee Lake, or Cannon Lake. We're talking about a new kind of lake.
Yeah, this is a great scoop from AnandTech this week. So they noticed that Intel, very uncharacteristically, is starting to talk about the future versions of their lakes, their lake code names, and not just the current ones. So typically when they're about to announce a new family of processors like Coffee Lake that we talked about earlier, that's all they'll talk about, the eighth generation. But AnandTech found this whole segment of information on Intel's website about Ice Lake, which is the code name of the week. So Ice Lake is one of these 10 nanometer processors that's coming, possibly next year in 2018, which begs the question, what about Cannon Lake, right? Which was supposed to be the first 10 nanometer processor family from Intel. We don't know what's happening with Cannon Lake. But AnandTech's article, it's pretty easy to find. Look for AnandTech and Ice Lake. They've got a lot of information in here in typical good AnandTech fashion, lots of deep history, plus a handy little chart to all these Intel Core code names. Because it's so confusing, right? You were reciting them by memory,
Sandy Bridge,
Leo.
Bridge and Ivy Bridge and Haswell and Roundwell. Sky Lake, Kaby Lake, Coffee Lake too. Canny Lake and Ice Lake coming this way. Watch out. Can you get to 4 nanometers?
This is like you sound like Eric Schmidt in that cartoon where he's like in the ice cream truck or whatever.
Yeah. It's really interesting. I don't know. 10 nanometers is so small. It's 10 billionths of a meter. It's so small.
I know. Because look at the first one. Sandy Bridge was 32 nanometers.
Yeah.
That was in 2011, right? Wow. And now look where we are, right? Now we're talking about 14. Now we're starting to talk about
10. Truck tire.
Yeah, this is crazy. So like you said earlier, Leo, when they actually switch to a smaller nanometer size, it usually means it's quite a big leap in processors.
Yeah. Look at this. You get, in a 14 nanometer process, you get 37.5 billion. Wait a minute. Is that transistor density? Oh yeah, that's density. What is it? What is these? I don't know. I can't even read what. What is that? What is 100 MTR slash mm squared transistor density? Per square millimeter. I don't know if that's individual 37.5 to 100.8. So it's almost triple the density by going down those extra 4 nanometers. That's a big difference.
Yeah.
But what are you going to do with all those extra transistors?
I know. What are these for? Right?
I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to Disneyland. No, that's...
No, we're adding acrylic to notepad.
It's about time.
Yeah.
Plus those new colors from the Windows console.
Right.
Yes.
8-bit color come cheap. Let me tell you.
Also, I mean, maybe new kinds of devices too, right? Like we are seeing right now things like HoloLens and augmented and virtual reality.
I think that's all you can say is it's going to be a breakthrough interface technology or...
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's been a long... Remember in the earliest days of computing, I know you guys are too young to remember this, but back when I was a boy, the hardware could barely keep up with Windows 1.0 and Windows 3.0. You know, it was sluggish. The hardware gets faster, so they put more in the operating system.
And there was this partially blame Microsoft for this as well.
There was this GUI hardware seesaw, but nobody said the user interface is too slow in a decade, probably. Right.
Right.
So it's certainly 5 years. And so they're making processors faster for no apparent reason.
There must be a reason, but we don't know it.
Yeah. Yep. We'll see. We'll see. All right. I want some beer. I need some beer.
Yes. So, the beer pick is from Paul's new home state of Pennsylvania.
Oh, that was nice of you.
Wait, what?
Wait, what?
It's not from your hometown. I heard you were moving. I think you're in a room right now in the state of Pennsylvania, perhaps.
Wait. Have you noticed? Is it less echoey in here?
Yeah, it sounds good.
Did
you put some carpeting on the wall?
No, I'm surrounded by wood now. It's like
and made boxes, right?
You know, you should get those IKEA carpets that they wear in Game of Thrones. I hear those are excellent soundproofing.
You could wear it on the show.
Those are nice.
Yeah.
Okay, so the beer pick is from Victory Brewing, which is in Pennsylvania, and they make a lot of really great beers, but I have not picked a pils in a while, so I'm picking for the pick today, Victory Prima Pils. So it's Pilsner. I never pick Pilsners because I'm not a huge fan of Pilsners.
Boring. Boring.
I think they're boring. But you know what? In the summer, they're actually the perfect beer. Or with spicy food, they also are the perfect beer. They're fairly light. They're more like a German-style beer. This one, the Victory Prima Pils, is only 5.3%. So you can have a few of them and be fine. Sessionable. Look at you using the word.
I'm learning from you. Everything I know about beer, I learned from Mary Jo.
But yeah, Paul, I know you don't drink beer anymore, but you know, if you needed to bring friends somewhere, I believe they're in
Iron City.
I don't have friends anymore either.
Iron City? You don't have friends? Okay. Well, if you had friends and you liked beer, you could bring them to Victory Brewing because they make a lot of really great beers.
Downingtown.
Is it Downingtown?
Where is it?
Downingtown, PA.
It's funny how you say the name of this place, and it has in no way helped me understand where it is, because I literally don't know where anything is in Pennsylvania.
Let's see.
We need to look on a map.
It looks like it's a popular place to drink. based
Pennsylvania.
On, you know, Dinington. I clicked on the name in the in Untappd, and I'm finding a lot of places.
It's sort of near Norristown, not too far from Reading, Lancaster, York.
Oh, Lancaster. It's over there.
I've heard of these places. Yeah.
Not far
I agree they're in Pennsylvania.
York, many people don't know, used to be the nation's capital.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah. It's not far from Philadelphia.
I was
either,
given the key to the city of York, PA.
I refused to live anywhere that wasn't one of the original 13 colonies. I don't even know what that means.
Okay. you lived in New Mexico. I don't think was that four, was that 12?
Also Arizona, but yeah. It's just, also, or the more or the 13 more, most recent states too. Those are also good.
They're most recent. That's
those
what
ones
likes.
In the middle are the ones I don't trust.
Yeah.
You're either all in the beginning or
Oh, and one more beer related thing. Yes. So at Ignite next month in Orlando, Microsoft's big show that Paul and I will be attending. We now have a place and a date for our Windows Weekly meetup, thanks to listener Gary Pretty, who's helped us out before. We're going to be having our meetup on Tuesday the 26th, even though the show will still be on Wednesday, the next day. And it's going to start at 6 p.m. It's at World of Beer, Dr. Phillips. So there are a bunch of different worlds of beer, but this one is called World of Beer, Dr. Phillips. So 6 p.m., no reservation needed. Come and hang with us.
Gary is our boots on the ground.
He is. He's that guy.
He does it virtually because he lives in England. But the point is,
I know.
Wow,
he's
nice
really good at finding beer places.
That's very nice.
He is. Yep. And he did all the legwork to help us set this up. So thank you, Gary.
Very nice.
And hope everybody can come and join us and have some beer.
September 26th, 6 p.m.
Yep.
No RSVP or some other alcohol. Of some other kind.
Yes, you could do that.
Drink beer.
I like the name, World of Beer.
If someone could bring some Cuban rum, that would be much appreciated.
Ooh, a little old Havana for old Polly Boy.
Speaking of which, Leo, a couple of weeks ago, I think, you found a place in the United States to buy that rum. Is that right?
I thought somebody had given me a link, yes.
Yeah, I got to look that up because, although as someone reminded me, I now live in Pennsylvania where you can't import alcohol from anywhere it's Pennsylvania. But I do still have friends in Massachusetts, so I'm thinking I will be able to work around it. Do you remember where you saw that?
Chat room May. I'm just looking at Havana Club. The problem is there's two Havana Clubs. There's the one that's made in Puerto Rico. You don't want that one. Yep. You want the Cuban.
It's probably okay, but you're right. I don't
want the
that
original Cuban old Havana.
Yep.
And the picture I showed you.
Right. Was the right bottle.
Actually, Havana Club. I'm sorry. Is this it? Let me just. Is this the rum you're looking for?
What the heck?
Is this it?
Yeah. Well, unless that's a different.
It might be a different bottle.
Midlet, is the logo?
Oh, I gotta get this stupid chat and cookie announcement.
I'm gonna have to look at my. Let me look at my photos here.
This is that's not the Don one we were Pedro drinking, Cubana. But that Cubana. But this, I think, is the one. Now, do they sell it?
No, you brought it up. Though. You brought up the correct bottle.
Yeah.
Earlier. I thought
they have Añejo 7 or Siete, as we Cubanos call it. Is that it?
No,
is that the bottle you're looking for?
It's
How
not.
About this? Rum bouillon. From Abelfoods.
Nope.
It's a cockle warming spiced concoction. How are your cockles since you came back?
Tired, Leo. excuse me. So the logo is correct.
Yeah. That's what I think. I think this is it. Anyway, this is masterofmalt.com.
Does it say El Ron del Cuba?
Yeah, it's from El Ron del Cuba. It's the
okay.
Yeah. So
that must be it.
Yeah, this is just the 3-year-old, that's all.
So the one I had is 7 years old.
Yeah, they have a Siete as well. So that's masterofmalt.com. Remember, kids, drink responsibly.
Yes.
But do drink.
But do, yes.
I always love that in the ads when they say, drink, just, you know, be responsible. I'm responsible?
Yeah. That's why I'm drinking.
That's why I'm drinking. If I were irresponsible. Anyway, Paul Thurrott will be back or not next week. Depends how much of this of Havana Club he gets his hands
on. Oh, I see.
No, you will be back. As will Mary Jo Foley. You'll find Thurrott at T-H-U-R-R-O-T-T. LeanPubTT.com. His books are at LeanPub.com. Mary Jo Foley's at AllAboutMicrosoft.com. They both inhabit the Twitter sphere.
Yes. Well, some might say haunt it.
Haunt it at Therot and at Mary Jo Foley, MaryjoFoley. Because if it were Joe, that'd be Liza. No, that's the wrong song. I don't know what I'm saying. I think I'm punchier than Paul at this point.
I think you are. I think it was all that Windows 10S talk.
Catching. You know, it's like when somebody yawns and it catches.
Yeah. I'm catching your punch.
How do your eyes hurt a little bit?
Yeah. I'm tired and I crave jamon.
Yep.
Our show is every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC. Please stop by and watch us live or join us in the audience. We have a very nice studio audience visiting us from Rochester, New York.
Oh, that's where my son goes to school.
Frank and Nick. Are you, Rochester, your son goes to RIT.
That's right.
Yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah. How's he liking Rochester? Well, he's not there yet.
Loves it, actually. No, oh, he's going back a week from Saturday.
How was winter? Because my daughter went to a school in Upper New York State, and winter...
The folks from Rochester will appreciate this because they probably prop this myth. But obviously, the winters are difficult. It snows a lot there, more than, say, Boston. But there was this story about the school where supposedly RIT never canceled school because they have these tunnels underneath the school that connect the buildings, which, by the way, exist.
It's true.
It's like a Dungeons and Dragons thing down there.
Nick is nodding.
But the thing is, a lot of the students who go to the school don't live at the school, so they actually do stop. They halt classes because people can't get there because there's so much snow.
Yeah. By the way, chat room has provided us with multiple places we can get Havana Club. Oh, no. See, this is the Puerto Rican one. That's not the one we want. Let me see if this... is this the right one?
Has somebody started a wiki yet? Could we get a definitive list of...
This is Liquor Mart, and they have the Elrond...
Liquor Mart.
Liquor Mart.
That's such a great...
Yeah.
That's... How is that not a store in the Boston area?
Liquor-Mart.
Oh, that's from Canada, though. So, yeah,
Liquor-Mart in Canada. Hey, you can't use that. Use the other one. Other thing I gave you was
called. I like Ott-Mart, but Liquor-Mart's pretty good, too.
I went to Liquor-Mart and I got some Havana Club. You can also watch the live stream twit.tv/live. You can join us in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. Or, and better, I think for most people who have an actual job, you can download a copy at any time of the day or night from our website, twit.tv/www. But downloading a copy is not my preferred method. I would prefer you get a fine podcast app. Let's say Pocket Casts, which is, you know, what's interesting, iTunes, which used to be like 90% of all podcast downloads, is now down to about 50%, and I just was told yesterday the number two app for downloading Windows Weekly is Pocket Casts.
That does not surprise me.
That's a long shot. And then Stitcher, and then the rest kind of trail off. There's a long tail, as you might imagine. You can even use those Twit apps, but do subscribe. That way you'll get it every week auto-magically. Thanks for being here. I hope you get a little nap in, Paul, before you get back to work. And
I'm not going to be able to sleep properly for about 2 weeks.
God, I'm just looking at a long, darn tunnel. Well, do the best you can. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you,
Mary Jo. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly.